Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. It's Tuesday. We're thrilled you're listening. Want to call in or text in? Why not? 312-981-7200. Hi. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, William.
Hello.
Have you made it through the night? I was worried about you last night after the death of Gene Wilder.
It's the strangest thing. With about a half an hour left in our show, actually, with exactly a half an hour left in our show, Steve, during the news, let us know the sad, sad news that actor Gene Wilder had died at age 83. And it was very emotional for both of us.
You especially. I really felt for you last night.
I can't put my finger on it. I was trying to figure out, both on the way home last night and then as I was laying in bed last night, how somebody who we've never met can mean that much to us, you know? And he did. And certainly we aren't the only ones. I saw just glowing tributes over the internet yesterday from people who worked with him, for people who never got to meet him, you know, just everybody whose lives were affected by him. And really all he did was he was in a bunch of great movies. But that's all it takes sometimes, you know, to make somebody one of your heroes, really.
My kids were aware of it because they get, you know, tweets and all that stuff. And they know him from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them about In Your Wedding Vows. Mm-hmm. And they both were like, oh.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah. I think the entire audience exhaled when you said that yesterday.
And for those who missed it.
All right, really quickly, because I don't know why it breaks me up. It just does.
I know it does, but it breaks everyone up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I don't know what it is. When I was a kid, all right, so Willy Wonka must have come out in 1969 or 1970, I think. That sounds about right, because I think I was seven when I saw it. And only twice in my life have I seen a movie twice in 2 days. Like with Willy Wonka, I went to see it with some friends. And when the movie was over, I just sat there. I always watch the credits to a movie anyway, but I just sat there staring at the screen, hoping so badly there'd be more. You know, sometimes at the end of a movie, they'll show you like a little bonus scene at the end, but I didn't want a bonus scene. I wanted a lot more.
Yeah.
I just wanted to keep, I was so happy for Charlie Bucket to have, I don't want to ruin it for anyone who hasn't seen it.
Spoiler alert. Because honestly, there are people who haven't and are now going to watch it. 1971, does that sound right?
Yeah, I guess 71. I was either 7 or 8, so 1971.
And we didn't go to the movies that much as a family, but my grandmother took me to see this, and she loved it, and I loved it.
You know what's funny is it didn't do well. When it first came out, it honestly, it's hard to imagine now because it's considered a classic, but like It's a Wonderful Life, there's so many movies that just... We perceive them as, oh, boy, this must have been the hottest thing in the world.
But not a box office smash.
It was not. It really wasn't. It wasn't until later, with repeat showings on television and VHS and later DVD, that it became such a juggernaut, giant movie. I saw it one day with some friends, with two friends, and loved it. And all that night, I kept thinking about that movie. And
that's
then I
saw written
it
about
the next
you.
Day.
I'm sorry.
You know what? It kind of is.
I know.
It really is. So in my wedding vows, at the very end, because Terry and I wrote our own wedding vows, I just said, there's a scene at the end of my favorite movie, and it is one of my two favorite movies, that and The Godfather, but I didn't want to quote The Godfather at our wedding. Leave the cannoli.
Save that for the 30th anniversary.
Right. I said, at the end of my favorite movie... There's a scene where Willy Wonka says to Charlie, never forget what happened to the boy who got everything he wanted. He lived happily ever after. And when I saw that in the theater, it took my breath away. And, you know, that's kind of what my wife does to me. She takes my breath away. So there's a parallel. It really is. It's my story, kind of, you know?
It really is.
It's, you know.
And watching the movie when I was little, I never thought I'd work with Charlie on the radio.
Yeah.
But then after watching it, after I've met you, it's your life story,
pretty
much. It
is my life story. Before you got here at WGN, when I was just doing fill-in work, this is even before I was doing the night show, I think I was only doing fill-in work, they said the five kids who played the five kids in the Chocolate Factory are coming to Chicago. You have a chance to interview them. What do you think? I go, oh, please let me talk to those five kids. Well, it turned out only four of the five were able to come. The kid who played Augustus Gloop was late on a flight from Germany, but the other four kids all came into Chicago. So what was going to be a 15 or 20 minute interview, I talked them into giving me an hour.
Awesome.
Which seems like a long time, but I had way more than an hour's worth of questions.
I'm sure you could have done the whole night.
Well, a lot of it, and I know we have it here in the archives here at WGN. I'm sure it's accessible somehow. But what really was magical was beforehand and after, as we were just walking around the halls of WGN, and I'm talking to these four, now they're adults, they were kids at the time. In my head, they were still the kids. It was still
just a little taller.
Yeah, yeah, that's all. But we were walking around the halls of WGN, because back then we were still on the lower level. Now most of the offices are upstairs on 7. But we were walking around, and it was so reminiscent of them just kind of exploring the chocolate factory, as myself and Stephanie Menendez, who works here at the station, were kind of giving them a tour of WGN. And they had time to kill until their next interview, so I just sat with them, and our interview was over, but I just sat with them and said, Gene Wilder means the world to me. I said, you guys got to work with him on a daily basis. Please tell me what that was like. And they just glowed, you know. They just said, we were all new to show business and to movies, certainly. And he honestly was kind of new to movies. He had done a lot of Broadway shows and plays, but movies were kind of new to him when he was Willy Wonka. And they just said, he treated us as an equal. He made us realize that even though this was a job and you had to be professional, the real thing was is that we were living a dream. We were, you know, we were doing what everyone in the world wants to do, being a movie, you know. And, you know, just to watch them as adults remember back fondly, it's really interesting. The kid who played Charlie is a guy named Peter Ostrom. He was in one movie. That was it. Like, he made this movie, and everybody thought, well, this kid now can do whatever he wants. He's the star of Willy Wonka. And he said, I didn't do any other movies because I knew deep down I could never get another experience like that.
Oh, my God.
It would never get better than it was working with Gene Wilder in that movie.
Even Charlie in real life is like you.
I know. I swear. I totally get that.
I know you do.
I really do. It's like, why, if it's the best, why bother? You can't beat the best. So they kind of understood that. The other interesting thing is, and I don't think this is on air. I think this was something that happened after our interview, but it might have been on air. They didn't show the kids. You know the room when they first go into the chocolate factory, and it's the room that looks like candy heaven.
Yeah.
It's got the chocolate river going through it and the volcano, and you can even eat the dishes.
All right.
They didn't show the kids that room. Like, the kids were around the rest of the set, but when it came to that room, they wanted their reaction to what that room looked like to be genuine. So they kept it from them until you see their faces when they first walk in. That's legit. That's them looking
their
around.
Their genuine
going,
reaction.
Look at this. Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that people suffer from Alzheimer's, and it's touched a lot of our lives. And the decision to wait until the time to disclose his condition.
Yeah.
As mentioned, we talked about this yesterday. His nephew had said through Variety magazine, the countless young children that would smile or call out to him, there's Willy Wonka. That's why he held back.
That's fantastic.
It is. And there are people on Facebook slamming him for that. Like, he had the opportunity to do something. It's your own personal decision what you want to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, after the fact, we can still talk about Alzheimer's now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think it's an admirable thing that he did.
Yeah, I think his reason for doing it couldn't be more genuine. He didn't want to taint anybody's moment,
right,
of thinking about him or seeing him or meeting him. It's just, you know, I read last night, I was just going all over the place looking at, you know, different celebrities and, again, people just who are fans, and it's hard to find anything bad to say about the guy. I mean, he was the consummate professional. Every movie he was in, I said yesterday, and I know this sounds cruel, he was in some bad movies. He was in some great movies, but if you do a bunch of them, you're going to be in some bad ones too. But even in the bad ones,
he shined.
Look at Haunted Honeymoon. It's terrible.
I didn't see Haunted Honeymoon. I don't think many people did.
There's a bunch that are just not good, but even in the ones that aren't good, he just has this look that you can't not fall in love with.
Did he wear mascara?
I don't think so.
Because those eyelashes just... My sister was a big fan of Young Frankenstein. That was, or Frankenstein, sorry. That was her favorite movie. So she found on the internet a little 5-minute clip that encapsulates the movie.
Oh,
and there
cool.
are just some of the funniest moments. And seriously, you look at those eyelashes. He's like a doe-eyed deer.
I know.
Just beautiful and gentle. And I can't understand why somebody would take fault with his decision not to admit
that
he has.
Doesn't make sense.
I know. Why would you be mad? And I know if you have someone, and I know there are a lot of walks and benefits
sure.
for Alzheimer's, but that's such a personal thing on
right.
how you deal with it. I think it's bad to criticize
See,
someone.
See, the thing about the look that he had was he was always smiling, but this close to tears.
Oh yeah,
right.
You're
right.
I mean, that's
yeah.
the thing about. I mean, even Willy Wonka was always this close to tears with those kids.
It
You're
was like
so
a
right.
contained madness. Like he figured out how to contain his madness.
Or it was just. I think of it as sort of a melancholy.
Yeah.
You know, masked by happiness too.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Well, his quote was, "My quiet exterior used to be a mask for hysteria." This is what he said to Time magazine in 1970. After 7 years of analysis, it just became a habit.
That's so funny. Really interesting. The one of the coolest things about Young Frankenstein, and it really is, it's probably one of the best parodies of anything you can ever imagine. It's perfect, right down to the fact that they used a lot of the same sets and equipment from the original Universal Frankenstein. They wanted it to be so authentic that they went back and they reconstructed what Frankenstein's lab looked like. They went all out. All right. It was that movie was his idea. Mel Brooks gets all the credit because he directed it. But Gene Wilder was the one who said to Mel Brooks, "Hey, you know what we should do?" And he threw out the idea, and Mel Brooks wasn't really sold on it. So the only Academy Award that Gene Wilder was ever up for was not an acting award, but it was a writing award because he co-wrote the screenplay with Mel Brooks and I think a third person too. I can't remember if there was a third person or not, but that was the only time he was ever up for an Academy Award was for screenwriting for Young Frankenstein. But that movie really came to be because Gene Wilder had to convince Mel Brooks this is a viable film. It's not just I think he said Mel Brooks thought it was a cute idea and that was the end of it, but he had to press and say, let's just put down a screenplay. I think this could be a great movie. And he was right. It's a really great movie.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that he had a hand in getting that on the screen.
Yeah.
And boy, star-studded. You forget how awesome Peter Boyle was.
Oh, yeah.
Ah!
So good.
And Madeline Kahn and Terry Gard, just beautiful and funny.
And Marty Feldman is so good. And
course.
Cloris Leachman is so
good.
Oh,
yes.
They're all an actor named Kenneth Mars, that's a name that will mean almost nothing to anybody. But if you saw this guy, he was kind of a mainstay of movies of that era. He plays the like the commandant, you know?
Yes.
He's a really talented actor.
Yeah, I knew him. I don't know what he's best known for, but if you looked him up, Kenneth Mars, you would know in a second. Because I recognized him
really
watching that clip.
Actor.
I'm like, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah. He died a few years ago, too. So, yeah, very sad. If you want to share some thoughts, we're at 981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, Gene Wilder is no longer with us. It's something we found out on the air yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about you all night because really he was in the story of your life, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I can't think of a movie that really does more encapsulate my life than that particular movie. And it's funny, both you and I had the same reaction as Steve was ramping up and saying his name. We're like, oh, just let him have been cast in some television show or movie or miniseries or something. Don't say it. And I mean, I think it played out that way. But yeah, there's only been a couple of people. Strangely, as I was thinking about this on my way in today, most of the deaths that affect me the most are people who have made me laugh really hard. Robin Williams' death really got to me. John Belushi's, Freddie Prinze's. There have been several people over the years, but Gene Wilder, boy, that's a tough one. It really is.
And his nephew, Jordan Walker Perlman, issued a statement yesterday saying, quote, "We understand when he was, he died from complications from Alzheimer's disease, 83, as we mentioned. And his nephew said, we understand for all the emotional and physical challenges this situation presented, we have been among the lucky ones. This illness pirate, unlike in so many cases, never stole his ability to recognize those that were closest to him, nor took command of his central, gentle, life-affirming core personality. The decision to wait until this time to disclose his condition wasn't vanity, but more so that the countless young children that would smile or call out to him, 'There's Willy Wonka,' would not have to be then exposed to an adult referencing illness or trouble and causing delight to travel to worry, disappointment, or confusion. He simply couldn't bear the idea of one less smile in the world. How nice is that? And how can you criticize a family for choosing to deal with it in their own way?
Right. Absolutely.
Some Facebook people were very angry, saying he had a platform. Why didn't he talk about this? Well, you know what? Talk about it now.
Yeah, I agree with you.
This is Bob on the line. Hey, Bob.
Hey, it's Taxi Driver Bob. How you doing, guys?
Hey, it's Radio Wendy and Radio Bill.
Yeah. When Bertrand gave a story yesterday, I just knew what was coming, and I was like just saying the same thing you guys were saying at the time. You see all these iconic people that we knew as kids and we grew up with, that don't seem to be replaced by the up and coming generation of iconic people. And he was, in my eyes, not just an actor, but an entertainer overall, and just a genius. Unfortunately, both of my folks have passed on, and they both had full blown dementia.
So sorry about that.
And my dad died this last past Christmas Day. And
so sorry.
It's still pretty strong in there. And you know, you see, I have a lot of admiration. Admiration for your folks. And my dad was a very talented individual that grew up in very poor and grew up in Englewood. The only way he was able to go to college was through being in World War II. But he was a very talented guy, and at the end he lost all that. And
does this bother you that Gene Wilder's family waited to announce?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I think that people that have experienced that in their family, they don't want, they want people to remember him as the way he was, because when he had Alzheimer's, it takes that away from you. You're not able to function and be as creative as you were, and you lose everything at the end. You know, at the end, when you're in that situation,
you're not the same person as you once were.
No, and he, you know, I think it was the right move for his family and for him. I think that they probably made a group decision when he was more in a cognitive state.
Absolutely.
And you want everybody to remember him the way he was, and always have those thoughts. I always think of all the great things that my dad and my mom did, but in the back of my mind, I remember the times where they weren't functioning like that. And it's very sad and very tough to deal with. And like you said, when you know, the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and things like that, when there are people involved that, you know, there's still children to this day watching that movie.
Absolutely. We are so sorry about your folks, Taxi Driver Bob, and thank you very much for calling.
The one
Appreciate
thing that,
that
Bob just said that rings the truest is, there isn't somebody else like him. Like with other actors, you could say, who's our generation's Cary Grant, or our generation's Marlon Brando, or our generation's Jack Lemmon? But I can't think of anybody with Gene Wilder that picks up that mantle. Can you?
Nope.
It's impossible. Nope. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. I've got a perfect puzzle for you. Steve, thanks very much.
D. Oh, I'm sorry.
Doopity D.
Listen to me. What do you get when you guzzle down sweets?
Eating as much as an elephant eats.
What are you at getting terribly fat?
What do you think will come of that?
I don't like the look of it.
No, I don't either. We found out yesterday the sad news that Gene Wilder, who played Willy Wonka and so many other memorable characters, died at the age of 83. So we're getting your thoughts and your remembrances about him. And I said to you, there's no actor right now that really kind of carries the torch. He's like the new Gene Wilder. Somebody came to mind, and it's a strange pick, but I have somebody. But let's get a call in or two, and then I'll tell you who I think kind of is that guy, kind of.
All right, I have someone, too.
All right.
Hi, Wally.
Hi, guys. I heard a story about Gene Wilder and Willy Wonka. I may have heard it actually on Nick's show this morning. And the story is this, that he agreed to do Willy Wonka under one condition. And that was that he could do the opening scene when Willy Wonka comes out, that he could do that the way he wanted. And what he wanted to do was come out, as you remember now, with the cane and
sure.
limping and everybody, I mean, because Willy Wonka was unknown. No one had seen him. They didn't know what the guy looked like or anything. And he comes out and they see him, you know, hobbling and with the cane. And if you remember, then the cane gets stuck in the brickwork, in the cobblestones, and he then takes one more step and then realizes he doesn't have the cane, and he starts to fall forward and jumps up, and he's, you know, laughing and everything. And Mel Stewart, the director, said, why do you want to do that? And he said, because I want immediately people to not know whether what they're seeing with Willy Wonka is real or make-believe.
That's perfect. You never knew throughout the movie, can I trust this guy or not trust this guy?
Exactly. And he said, and the story is that was the, he said he would not do the movie unless he could open that scene the way he wanted.
That's perfect. It really
Thank
is.
Thank you for sharing
it also,
that.
It also, I think, shows, you know, that Gene Wilder was bringing something to these parts, not just the way they were written. And I would guess in some of his other movies are probably were very similar things, you know, where he put his own touch on that.
Sure.
And probably, I mean, like the opening scene from Willy Wonka, you know, probably really added to the role and to the movie because he was able to have a little bit of creativity in the way that the person was presented that he was playing.
What a man. We will all miss him. Wally, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right. I know you have come up with somebody. We were saying, is there an actor today that kind of is the new Gene Wilder? And I have one that kind of fits, but who is yours?
Well, I mentioned, although he's no longer with us either, Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, there's some element of there.
A lot of it is those little sweet, gentle eyes, the eyelashes, but the sweet gentleness of Andy Kaufman reminds me very much of Gene Wilder.
The one in my head, and I know this is, it'll seem like, oh no, that's not Gene Wilder at all, and it's not, but it's close. Mark Lynn Baker, who is in the movie My Favorite Year. Most people know him from Perfect Strangers. He was Cousin Larry. All right. Do you remember that with his
Belky?
Cousin? Yeah, with Belky, who came from somewhere in Eastern Europe. All right. So there's something in Mark Lynn Baker's eyes in the movie My Favorite Year that has Gene Wilder's tone to it. You know, there's like a, even though it's funny, there's like an underlying sadness there. You know what I mean
I
by that?
I get that a little bit.
Yeah.
You got to look them up, though, people.
Yeah. But other than that, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who has his quality. A couple people last night in the tributes to him were talking about how he really had the mannerisms. And he played a silent film star in a couple of different movies.
Yeah.
So it's the
silent movie.
Or
was he not in that?
He wasn't in that. I'm trying to think of what the movie was where he played kind of like a Valentino type. He made a couple movies that were Mel Brooks-like movies, like Sherlock Holmes' Smarter Brother. It's not a Mel Brooks movie. It was a Gene Wilder movie. He wrote and directed it. But then there's this other movie where he's like Valentino. The World's Greatest Lover is what it's called. So his mannerisms a lot of the times were the, like that sort of actor before films had talking in them. His face was that expressive. All right, we need to take a break. Thank you, everybody, so much for calling in. Oh, several people said I made a mistake earlier, and I did. He was also nominated. He was nominated as a co-writer for Young Frankenstein, but he was also nominated for an Academy Award for supporting actor for Blazing Saddles, for The Producers as well. So I left that out. A couple people mentioned that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we appreciate it. All right, a quick break and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it is a Tech Tuesday, and we find out what's going on in the tech world with CNET senior editor. Her name is Ashley Esqueda. Hi, Ashley.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I'm a big U2 fan, and I'm thinking Bono is going to write a song about Apple because Apple has been sending some work to Ireland, and now they owe some back taxes.
Oh, boy, this is a big story this morning. So Apple has been slapped with a $14.5 billion tax bill from
this
the
is
European
with a B.
Union. Billion with a B, big money. So basically, here's how it breaks down. Long time ago, Apple started up a shop in Ireland, and over time, Ireland has renegotiated lower tax rates with them so that they are encouraged to hire more workers in Ireland. So that all sounds well and good. And a lot of companies do this. They keep their profits offshore so that they don't have to pay the higher tax rate here in the United States. And the EU, the European Union, had a committee take a look at that and say, you know, it just seems like you're paying not enough taxes in Ireland, because the tax rate there is about 12.5%. Well, this committee found out that Apple was paying a tax rate of about 0.005%, which is just about nothing, and said, hey, you got to pay taxes. So you owe $14.5 billion plus interest.
Oh, my God. Thinking you're getting away with this and then all of a sudden getting socked with this bill.
Yeah.
Pretty rough. Well, Apple says they have not gotten away with anything because they've done nothing wrong. So Tim Cook responded this morning to the ruling and had about an 800-word statement. And he said this is an overreach and the EU is trying to rewrite Irish tax law. And we have always paid what we have been told we owe. Which makes sense. I mean, Ireland told them you owe this much money at that tax rate, and then Apple paid that amount. But, you know, it's sort of that question of sometimes what you owe to the IRS or sometimes what you owe to, you know, a country is not what you should be paying. And so we see this a lot with, you know, tax loopholes and things like that. So Apple is saying, like, we've always paid what Ireland has said we owed, and we've made that commitment, and we've always honored it, and this is an overreach by the European Union, and we don't want to pay this, and we're going to appeal that ruling. So they are going to appeal. So we'll see how this plays out, but it'll be really interesting to see what the final decision is, because if they do end up having to pay those taxes, we're going to see a lot more companies maybe changing the way that they do business overseas, because they may have to also pay taxes. Say other companies may find that they too will be put on the line for quite a bit more than what they had been paying.
In the interim, Ashley, is it business as usual for Apple? Are they penalized at all while they wait for a decision? What happens?
It looks like there will be interest building up because they said, hey, you got to pay, you know, this $14.5 billion plus interest. So yeah. I'm assuming that will continue as they appeal the ruling. I don't even want to know what the interest rate is.
Is it more than 0.005 than they were paying?
Probably, honestly. Like, I don't think the EU is going to let them get away with a 0.005 interest rate. So for penalties, but yeah, this is it's a pretty big ruling in terms of, you know, companies keeping money offshore. And of course, like, companies do this because they're able to keep more profit. And so the EU is also saying, hey, you can't say that all of the product was sold in Ireland or all of the profits came to Ireland when you sold those phones in other European Union countries. You can't say, oh, well, all of our all the product was sold in Ireland or all of our profits came to Ireland. So that's where we pay our taxes, as opposed to each individual EU country. So it'll be very interesting to see how this all kind of plays out for Apple. It's been a very a week of highs and lows for them.
Okay. Speaking of which, because it has been announced that the Apple iPhone 7 is coming out. Is this bad timing?
I would say probably the announcement of the event, which will be next Wednesday, will probably help with this ruling in terms of stock prices. Like, I would imagine it's sort of helping it maybe not, you know, I don't think Apple stock will ever crater, so to speak. But I definitely think that the Apple event invite coming out yesterday certainly maybe helped a little bit.
And they are auctioning off that Apple One computer that we talked about last week. And how far have the bids gotten up to?
Oh, my gosh. You know what? I haven't been keeping tabs on that. I'm in New York right now helping your very own Bridget Carey, your original Tech Tuesday girl, get settled back in after her maternity leave.
Oh, all right. Yeah, we know you guys today, I think, is your last day filling in for her, right?
It is. We'll be back next week.
We will miss you.
I'll miss you guys, but anytime you need me.
Oh, that's so nice.
All right, well, spending enough time on Apple, what about Android phone users? Is there any news in the Android world?
So there's definitely a few different things happening in Android. So Android's Nougat version of its software is out for people to get if they have Nexus devices. This is sort of the standard Android way of doing things. Now, Google will release a new version of Android, and then usually the people who have Nexus devices are able to sort of get that update first and then start seeing it roll out to other devices on other carriers. So you'll see, you know, a Galaxy S7 get it later. You'll see, but it's the reason why is because they always have to go through all of these approval processes, not only with testing on the device itself, but also with the carriers. So they have to go through those specific approval processes before they're able to push an update like that.
Is there anyone besides Bill Leff who's using a Windows phone?
I think I'm the only one.
You might be the Highlander of Windows. There is only one.
Yeah.
You know, there was big news with the Apple iPhone that we were talking about on the air, that there was an update that was crucial that you download due to security compromises and stuff on your phone. And the weird thing is it didn't come as an alert on my phone. I heard about it on our show.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a 9.3.5. It was a fix to help with security things. Why didn't that come as a little pop-up to us?
That's a great question. And I've always wondered, I think Apple tries to sort of downplay its intrusiveness in terms of a push to your device.
But this was a big one.
For me, I would have liked to have seen, I would have liked to have seen a push update that says this is an extremely important update. You need to install this. You must install this. But I think they also like to give Apple users their freedom and say, like, well, if you're choosing not to update this, like, that's at your own peril. But 9.3.5 closed a vulnerability called Trident, and it was basically a spyware where you were able to sort of tap on a link, and then it would actually jailbreak your phone remotely.
Nice.
And so that's not a good thing. And so they fixed that, and they released that update late last week. And we're just, a lot of people, like you were saying, a lot of people are kind of finding out about this in terms of hearing it from somebody maybe that they know, or maybe that they saw on CNET. Maybe they saw that article that says you need to update your iPhone right now, and here's why. But it is a security issue, and it was a really important security update that Apple released last week to close that threat.
And finally, we've mentioned, various different types of phones, but now let's talk about a provider. T-Mobile had some spotty coverage, to say the least, didn't they?
I love this story so much. So last week, T-Mobile tweeted out a photo, and with this caption, it said, a field engineer took this 125 feet up on a tower. And it was a picture way up in the air on a cell tower, and the cell tower equipment is covered in snakes.
Oh, nice.
just snakes coiled all around each other and all over the equipment. And I'll tell you, I'm glad Indiana Jones wasn't there. I would not have enjoyed that. And so T-Mobile made a joke about it and said, now we have to make this a movie title. So far, we've got snakes on an array as opposed to snakes on a plane. And a lot of people on Twitter responded in kind, and they had a great time thinking up names of movies. So some people said Tower Medusa, High Power Coils, Snake NATO, Towering in Serpento, and Slithering Heights.
Oh, great one.
Oh, I like the last one. Well, I wouldn't have.
I'm
glad I wasn't the one climbing up to work on that tower and find that, because you need one of those long sticks to get all those snakes off. Pretty funny.
I'll tell you, it's, if you're afraid of heights and snakes, this is like literally somebody's worst nightmare out there. Like, this is just, you don't want to find a nest of snakes anywhere, much less 125 feet in the air.
Oh, no.
So I imagine someone who has a deep fear of heights and a deep fear of snakes probably found this picture to be the worst thing they've ever seen in their life.
Thank you so much. She's Ashley Esqueda, and she is a senior editor over at CNET. And Bridget Carey, we've been talking to. She's back from maternity leave. And you've done a great job, and we'll talk to you whenever we can, Ashley.
It has been my pleasure. Thank you so much, guys. Bye.
Thank you, Ashley. Take care. We'll take a quick break, find out what's in the news next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Just this morning, I was giving Michael a ride to high school. He has one college in mind that he wants to go to. And I've been on his back about, write your essay, do this, do that.
Right.
And the neighbor kid was walking to school, and I said, hey, you need a ride, Andrew? Hop in, you know? And so I thought, I'm going to quiz somebody else's kid. I said, do you know where you want to go to college yet? I'm not really sure just yet. And I'm thinking, my son's so behind, at least he has it nailed down to a couple of colleges.
Right.
but I don't know what I'm supposed to do as a parent to help. And we have an expert in here, and her name is Paula Kosin. You have done career counseling, career coaching for over 15 years, licensed clinical professional counselor, a special emphasis on career counseling.
Yep.
So I'm imagining if some kids don't know where they want to go to college, how can they decide what they want to be when they grow up?
Well, I think that in our culture, we usually do it this way. Everybody searches for a college, and then somewhere along the line, they figure out magically what they're going to major in. And then they graduate, and they really haven't thought about what kind of a job they want to get. And what I like to do is do it the other way, which is take a look with your kids at potential careers that line up with their strengths mm-hmm. and their interests, and then look at that, because there's tremendous information out there, and then back into, so what kind of majors prepare you for those careers, because often it's not just one, and then you can back into what schools should we be looking at that have a really good program in that. And if, I mean, not that they're going to narrow it always down to one,
right?
But if they also narrow it down to a couple, that at least gives you some starting point to start looking at colleges.
And somewhere in there, you want to figure out a college that has some sort of a placement plan, don't you? Some college that is very successful at advancing somebody once they've graduated into their field.
That's one of the statistics that colleges have been waking up to, especially since the recession.
Yeah.
Because parents and students and the public and the media are looking at colleges and saying, what are the results? What are the outcomes? Not just a degree, but what about your placement? So mm-hmm. the best statistic, if you can find it for a college on their website, is how many students in a particular major, let's say, found jobs, usually it's within 6 months, in the area of their major.
Yeah.
And that's the piece that's not quite there yet for most colleges. Usually, if you're lucky, they'll say, what students have gotten jobs within 6 months. Well, if they're, you know, working in fast food.
Right, not in their career choice.
Yeah, that doesn't, you know, that shades it in a bad direction.
So I would assume, Paula, that a college or university that's good at that will play that up a lot, but the ones that are kind of holding back, maybe they're not quite as good.
Well, not quite as good, and sometimes some of the schools, the smaller schools, may not have the staff to do all that tracking.
Oh, maybe.
Because that's a huge investment.
Mm-hmm.
And colleges need to wake up and take a look at their career services and say, we need to beef up the staff and we need to beef up the budget. And that hasn't happened in many places. Mm.
I'm going to throw a question out there that people are going to gasp at, especially my sister if she's listening. My son Michael wants to be a musician. Not that.
Not yet? Okay.
Not yet.
All right.
And so he knows that. So we looked at schools that have a good music program. Indiana University, I think that's too big for him. Mm-hmm. DePaul here in Chicago, great music school, and Belmont University in Tennessee, which that's his first choice.
Mm-hmm.
But then I keep thinking, all these kids that go to college and they graduate and they have this hideous student loan thing that's bogging them down.
Mm-hmm.
Is college as important now as it was? Is it more so?
Let me put it this way. Not necessarily 4 years of college and beyond, but some kind of education or training or apprenticeship after high school is absolutely critical. Because the jobs that you used to be able to get by and get into and perhaps be in a union and make a good living and a good life for you and a family just aren't there anymore. And so you have to have either a certificate program that would be like a one-year thing at a community college or city college, a two-year degree associate's preparing for a career like dental assisting or radiographer, the x-ray technician, for instance. Nice money there, salaries, or the four-year degree or beyond. So you have to have something after high school.
Yes.
Since you brought up dentistry, one of my best friends is a dentist and has his own practice and needed to bring on a younger apprentice dentist. Mm-hmm. And he said pretty much...
apprentice dentist.
The apprentice dentist. Everybody that
would not want to be that person's patient.
He said that they were all coming in $300,000 in debt just from paying for their college.
See, that's what scares me.
And that's true. I think that one of the things, when you start looking at careers with your kids, and it's not to box them in, it's to look at the options and be more informed, You can then work back so that, for instance, social workers, often it's hard to get above a $45,000 or $50,000 a year job
sure.
as a social worker unless you're managing a practice or something like that. So what you want to do, and this is part of the lessons of life, you know, the kid may want to go to the most elite university, big bucks and everything else, and you really have to look at what are they looking for as a career path and a major, and then back into, because the advice out there that I've read is that you shouldn't take on more debt than 1 year's salary for whatever career you're going
but
into.
That's impossible.
To do.
Well, that's the guidelines that the financial planners put out there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you do have a lot of debt. And I worked with somebody who was actually mid-career, and she was in her second year of residency in emergency medicine and had like $300,000
sure.
in debt. So it's not like she could like bail out of, and she hated it. And by coming through the process, and this is when I was at Career Vision and we used aptitude tests too,
yeah.
we were able to identify that she had a real value for wellness. And when she worked in emergency rooms, she says, people come in and they've abused themselves in their health lifestyle. We patch them up and we send them out. And 2 weeks later, they're back with the same problem. So
yeah.
that was facing her. But also, she felt like she was under too much pressure to make decisions, obviously.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't do that.
So
yeah.
instead of bailing and having this horrendous debt and trying to start over in another career, she made the mid-course career change into family practice. So she's not under the pressure to make diagnoses split second.
Right.
And they're not life and death. And she gets to see people and form a relationship so that she really can live out her wellness value.
Yeah.
That's
so
a great transition.
That's huge. And she's also being able to pay off all that debt.
All right. So what if you get a kid like my neighbor who he had one school in mind, but he wasn't sure where he wanted to go to college? How do you help kids realize what they want to do with their life? I knew probably in eighth grade I wanted to be on the radio. I really did.
Yeah, when I read both of your bios, and even Kevin, you know, when you looked at his LinkedIn bio, you can see that you had something in mind early and were able on your own or maybe with some adults kind of figure out how to work your way toward what you're doing now, and I think that's fabulous. But you can accelerate that a little bit, and if your son is interested in music, here, you know, the gasp is from the parent is the first reaction.
Sure, of course.
But the second reaction is, that's interesting. Let's take a look at the music industry and learn a little bit about it so that they have a more practical, down-to-earth understanding of what is the life of a musician? And if you want a family someday,
right.
if you're working on a tour or gigs on Saturday and Friday nights till late, they need to know that, and they're not thinking that. They just love music.
And there are a lot of people who are musicians who don't make it big, so they have to have something to fall back on, so that's something you need to
have
as well.
And it's not even, and maybe music for some of those people that aren't at the top of their game and may become famous, although it's hard to dissuade them at 16.
Right.
But what you can do is take a look at the industry, because you can be in the music industry and feed off of that. But if you've got great skills in accounting and attention to detail, you could be an accountant in the same way that somebody could work for the Blackhawks or Cubs or whatever organization. They still need human resources people. They still need accountants. They need marketing people. You don't have to be playing on the field or on the ice.
All right. I'm telling Michael he will become the accountant for the Rolling Stones.
He'll be thrilled.
Your daughters kind of knew what they wanted to do as well and then sought out schools that would be great for it.
Yeah. I think they did it in the right order. I mean, I know every kid
Tell
is
the story,
different.
Yeah.
But, you know, at some point you figure out what you're good at. You want to have a backup plan, a plan B. But, you know,
what was your plan B? I'm just curious.
I still don't know what I want to be yet. I'm still trying to figure that out.
And I hear that from the parents that I used to, you know, when I worked with their kids, they're like, where were you when I was 16?
Right.
But I think that what happens is that you can zero in on, and not so much a plan B like, this is not what I really want to do, but it's, they used to say, go get your teaching degree so you can at least fall back on teaching.
Right.
That's not the way to make a career. And not that everybody wakes up every morning and is passionate about it, because I think that's an overused word, but you get some kind of charge out of it. And so looking at the first thing what you said was most people, whether they're students or adults, don't have a good estimate of their strengths.
Isn't that something you would think that it would be almost automatic?
You would. But again, when I worked with aptitudes at Career Vision, and not to give them a plug, but aptitudes are fascinating and they're not used enough in career planning. Interests and personality surveys usually are. But when you can zero in on aptitudes, somebody can say, I'm not really good in math. And that's because in high school, when you keep going in math further than I went, you get into more theoretical math.
Sure.
And for the kids that have high spatial abilities is what we call it, the hands-on kids that like to build things like that are going to be, it gets more and more airy-fairy and theoretical, and they're more practical.
Right.
Or like business math is practical math, accounting. And so they get disenchanted with math because they don't like it, they don't do well in it, and yet they're actually, their aptitude, their potential for being good in math and kind of the right kind of math could be really strong. So that's the power of getting that information early when a student is 16 or so, but it's never too late.
And we'll find out how to go about doing that. We're talking to Paula Kosin. Do you have a website where people can reach you?
I have an email address. I don't have a website because now I'm consulting on my own.
All right.
And it is paulakosin2@gmail.com.
Okay.
And Kosin is K-O-S-I-N.
We will continue talking and find out how we find out what we're interested in. And Bill will try and help you with your interests.
I hope so. Thank you for that.
312-981-7200. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. All right. We are talking to Paula Kosin, and I was in the process of getting your exact title. Talent. Go ahead. You were telling me off the air.
Talent Development Consultant.
Talent Development Consultant. Mm-hmm. She is Paula Kosin, and her email, paulakosin, K-O-S-I-N, number2@gmail.com. We were talking before the break about an aptitude test to maybe find out what you're good at and what your interests are, kind of where they connect.
Aptitudes are what you're hardwired to do well. So when you go into a career that uses your top strengths, you will be more successful. And then also a good career planning or assessment would include interests and usually a personality instrument. So kind of get a holistic picture of an individual.
Now, are the guidance counselors at school bringing up these aptitude tests? Where can we find these?
I can suggest a couple. The guidance counselors at school are wonderful, and they work hard, and they've got way more students to take care of than they know what to do with.
Absolutely.
And their expertise typically is not in the career area. Their focus is on college.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really good at identifying what colleges have really good programs and stuff. And they get in school, and parents will have access to this. There's a system called Naviance.
What is that?
And it's a system that really, for the school, creates an online portfolio, and it tracks all your college applications and stuff. But it has a career testing or assessment component, but it's just on personality and interests. So you don't get the aptitudes. But that's one thing to kind of start and put your toe in the water because it's for free.
And all the counselors make the kids sign on and get an account and the parents too, and it's a really helpful website.
Yeah, it's very, very helpful. But on the career planning, they give a little bit of attention to that, but that's not the forte for Naviance. There's also a couple, and I'll mention... if you want to do aptitude testing, kind of the grandfather organization that's always done that is the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation. But they will only do aptitudes. They will talk about your pattern of strengths, and you actually go and do the investigation of careers and stuff.
You pay for these tests,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
These, are they expensive? You would pay for. Typically around $700.
Are they really? Yeah.
But the important thing to remember is that when you're spending $100,000 to $250,000, you know, ticket
for
price.
For your college career.
For one kid to go to college.
Oh, my
it's
God.
A smart investment. And so Johnson O'Connor is one, but they'll only do aptitudes and talk about your patterns that kind of map to certain kinds of careers. Career Vision and Disclosure, I worked there for 12 years. I haven't for 2 years now. Fabulous process, because they do aptitudes, interests, personality, and values, and they actually will put a list together of about 10 different occupations.
Yeah.
And this is
pull
for someone...
career information. So it gives you all the tools to start exploring right away.
And this is for someone who has no idea, and there are a lot of kids out there. I'm just going to go to college. I'm not even going to declare a major. I think you have to put one down, but you can change it.
Oh, sure.
I'm going to get all my requirements out of the way, and then hopefully something will hit me. So these kids would benefit from this.
Oh,
other
yeah.
kids that have an idea of what they want to do, you don't really need this.
Except that this can verify that they are headed in the right direction, and it can fine-tune. So a kid may know they like to build things, and they're good in math. So I've heard from parents. They'll say, oh, we got that down. My son's going in, or my daughter's going into engineering. And I look at them, and I go, do you realize there's like 25 to 35 kinds of engineering you can go
sure.
into?
Yeah.
And sitting at a computer all day for electrical engineering is vastly different than being a civil engineer blasting through a mountaintop so that you can build a tunnel through
mm-hmm.
it. Huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize that. So when you can become more informed, that's the key. And then there is nothing more exciting for parents than having a focused, directed, and motivated student.
Right, right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
When they hope that happens.
Take off for college and...
But you know what? Clear this up really quickly, Paula. We're out of time. But
yeah.
there's nothing wrong with a kid who is Wendy's son's age or even beyond who still isn't quite sure what their career path or direction is. That's not the strangest
thing. That's normal, I bet.
Well, and part of it is there's a readiness component. And you know that from being parents.
Yeah.
Some kids are ready for things earlier than others. If
mm-hmm.
there's a eighth grader or freshman in high school who has older siblings or older cousins or whatever who are going to college and they've been to a college football game and stuff, that starts that readiness as opposed to, just being focused on school activities and sports or whatever
yeah.
they're into. So there's a readiness component, but what happens with the students that don't know what their major is and don't have any idea, in high school when everybody is a senior and everybody's like, where are you going and what are you
right.
majoring in? They feel bad,
yeah.
and sometimes they just make up a major because they don't want to say, oh, I don't really know, and then get hammered for that.
Yeah.
And once you're in college, if you don't know your major, you can't start taking courses because they have to be taken in sequence.
Oh,
so
I guess,
especially
yeah.
for kids that are changing majors all the time, that's when you extend your career in college way beyond 4 years. And again, at a state school, that's $10,000 for an extra semester. So that's an expensive. So the trade-off, there is no, I mean.
All right, I'm throwing my hands up and now I'm finished.
Oh, no.
Her name is Paula Kosin. There are a lot of people that want to get in touch with you. You've put together an award-winning parent guide called Getting Started, Talking with Your Child About Career Choices. What's the best way for people to reach you if they don't have a computer? You gave your email address, but someone wants a phone number. You're on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah.
Phone number to call?
It would be
630-303-3969.
630-303-3969.
Call collect. Her name is Paula Kosin, K-O-S-I-N. You can go to email paulakosin2@gmail.com. Thank you.
And I would be very open to speaking to parent groups, whether they're in schools or employees in a company. I did a presentation for McDonald's
mm-hmm.
mothers who are employees, school counselor groups, teacher groups, like in Teacher Institute days and stuff.
Right.
Great idea.
Or working with a company with their interns and with their young professionals. Would love it.
We will forward your information. Paula Kosin is her name, K-O-S-I-N. You can find her online. Thank you so much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Absolutely. A quick break. Kim with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's stopped raining right now, so that's good news. It's going to rain again later.
They were looking at it throughout the day. Rough morning rain-wise, but for right now, very nice and dry outside.
We were talking to Paula Kosin, and again, she is Paula Kosin, K-O-S-I-N, and some interesting ideas. I don't know, this whole getting ready for college thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting ready for college. This is what I used to say. I already did my homework. I'm not
right.
helping you with
it's on
homework.
You.
It's I
punk. Did you
God,
say
was,
that?
No, but it's so much easier before I had kids and when I was 12.
Well, yeah.
God. Sure. And right. When I was, my first real job I had was at Brookfield Zoo. And not only do we mourn the death of Gene Wilder, who died at the age of 83,
yeah.
But there's another celebrity of sorts who died at the age of 83 as well.
I know who this is. I knew this would bother you a little bit. It should.
It's Cookie the Cockatoo from Brookfield Zoo.
Who's been there
since it opened
forever.
In 1934.
Yeah.
He was 1 year old when he arrived from Australia, and I worked on the authentic steam. I first worked in the stands at Brookfield Zoo, mm-hmm. and so did Paula, by the way, our last guest.
Did.
She worked in the stands at Brookfield Zoo, and then I kept looking at the authentic steam engine railroad, and I'm like, I want to work on that. I want to be a fireman on it, which is the person, not the engineer, but the person who shovels coal
into
the wood burning or into the coal burning engine.
That was your dream job there.
I really wanted to do it. You got to wear overalls.
Yeah, there's that. Right.
I'm in high school at the time. I wanted to wear overalls for a job.
Yeah.
I didn't get that job. I got a job narrating on it.
Now, some would argue that's the better job.
I know.
Don't you think? That's more personality driven.
Yeah, but I was a bit of a tomboy. And I just thought it would be cool to wear the pinstriped overalls and get soot on my face and all
that.
So I did narrate on the railroad train when that went away and was sold and is up in the Railroad Museum near Union, Illinois.
Yeah.
Then I worked on those motor safari trains, like the Zebra and the Cheetah.
Right.
And every day that I narrated, I would talk about Cookie the Cockatoo, who has been here since the zoo opened in 1934.
Yeah.
So then to hear Cookie the Cockatoo passed away, he was a Major Mitchell's cockatoo.
What does that mean?
That's just the name. He's kind of
is that a brand?
A pinkish.
A breed?
Yes. He would, you know, most cockatoos are white. He was, he was like flamingo colored. He was kind of a pinkish corally color.
Oh.
And he was the oldest.
How prevalent is that in the bird world? I don't know. Does that happen a lot?
I believe Major Mitchell's cockatoo are that color.
Oh, that's the norm for them?
I don't know. If it wasn't in my script, I don't
know. Oh, all right.
But I'm reading now. He was the oldest resident of Chicagoland's largest zoo and the only member of its original animal collection from 1934. That's impressive
that's
to me.
That's very impressive.
And can you believe a bird? I know they say if you get a parrot, and this is a type of parrot, that they live a long time. Do you ever think a bird's going to live 83 years?
No. Uh-uh. That was a shock.
And he's in the Guinness Book of World Records. Guinness certified the bird as the world's oldest living parrot in 2014.
The world's oldest living. That's
so
very impressive.
Cookie the Cockatoo was a celebrity in his own right, and he arrived at the age of one from Tauranga Zoo in Australia.
Did he still squawk with an Australian accent, or was it mostly an American-sounding accent?
He was actually still squawking because I did a story on him yesterday, and they had a birthday party for him earlier this month.
Yes.
And when they sang happy birthday, you can hear him squawking in the background.
Wow.
Yeah.
Shrimp on the bobby.
That's what they say. That's what Australian birds would say. You know how
and he looked good for 83. I got to tell you.
Did he look good?
Yeah.
He didn't hit on you, did he, Kim? That would be embarrassing. I hope he didn't.
Well, I wasn't there. I just saw the tape.
Oh, okay. You know how when somebody reaches a certain age, they say, "What is the key to your longevity?" What do you think his answer would be at the age of 83? What
great keepers at Brookfield Zoo.
Is that what it is? That's probably
right. In the birdhouse.
Yep.
Over the years, Cookie's popularity grew. He touched many people's lives. I have to tell you, it was very sad for my kids to lose Gene Wilder because they loved Willy Wonka.
Sure.
They're like, Willy Wonka's dead.
Yeah.
But then we heard the news that Cookie died, and they were equally as
they
upset.
They were just as, yeah.
Because they've gone to the zoo since they were infants.
Yeah.
And they now want to go to the zoo on Sunday. And I said, guys, he's gone.
Will there be a service? They should have a service. What religion was he? Do we know?
I don't know.
You don't know?
He got cards, letters, and toys and pictures from admirers around the world. Hmm. Every year on his birthday, they'd celebrate
it,
as Kim mentioned.
That's very nice.
His pink and salmon feathers were unmistakable for regulars at Brookfield Zoo.
Was he the only bird of that type there at the zoo? Did they have other like pink birds like him?
Well, they have flamingos, which I've been told, and I wonder how true it is, that they're pink because they ate so much shrimp. Because if that's the case, you should be red because you eat so much lobster.
I think that's one of those things that your aunt tells you.
I've been told that too, Wendy, so I bought it too.
I can't imagine that.
Well, I will get to the bottom of that, by the way.
That's not accurate. You know how your aunt goes, you eat so much pizza, you're going to turn into a slice of pizza. That's never happened ever once, ever. But we all go, I better be careful.
You know, teenagers have issues with pimples and people call them pizza face, so maybe there is a connection
maybe
there.
It ties in.
So this is sad. In recent weeks, Cookie had seemed a bit off, according to business associate of Brookfield Zoo, Tim Snyder, no relation.
No.
He was found at the bottom of his enclosure on Saturday and taken to the hospital, which is on grounds.
Yeah.
And then the zoo staff made the difficult decision to euthanize. At 83 years of age, Cookie was no ordinary parrot. Wow, this gets weird. I don't know if I want to continue.
No, you have to. This is the part I most want to hear.
Can we take a break? Because this gets weird.
All right. This is what I want to hear. All right. We'll find out the weird part of the death of Cookie the Cockatiel. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Cookie the Cockatoo was no ordinary parrot. In fact, the type of parrot that Cookie the Cockatoo was, a Major Mitchell's cockatoo, the oldest resident of Brookfield Zoo, one of its original animals from their collection that they had when they opened the zoo in 1934. Guinness World Records certified the bird as the world's oldest living parrot in 2014. He was found at the bottom of his enclosure on Saturday, taken to the hospital, and zoo staff made the very difficult decision to euthanize.
No. Is a cockatoo and a cockatiel the same, or are they different? Do you know?
I don't know, Bill. I got to tell you, I think a cockatiel is smaller. I could be wrong.
Is that
but
right?
They
that
are
sounds
definitely
right.
Cousins.
Yeah, they are cousins. Okay.
Yes.
Was Cookie married? Does he leave?
I don't believe so.
Never got married. A lifelong bachelor.
Yes.
A cockatiel is a bird within the cockatoo family.
But it's a smaller version, I believe.
Did you know that, Kevin, or did you look that
up? Yeah, I just knew
You just knew that?
I know bird things.
Wow.
His brain is like a fast facts almanac.
Well, I just Googled it and apparently spelled it wrong because I got cocktails.
Oh.
Oh.
How about that?
I'm all for that.
How about that?
I'm going to have a cockatiel cocktail. I'm going to make one. Invent one. Yes.
It's a martini with a feather in it. It's delicious.
This is from the LaGrange Patch, by the way. And I said it got weird here because it kind of does. Not about his death, but an Indian healer and parrot sanctuary founder, Dr. Sri Ganapathy Sakadanadanda.
Oh, they used to say that on Rona Martin's Laughing.
Swamji. That's all his name.
They didn't
it's
say
long.
That part. They just said that Sakatumi thing you said. Judy Carn, I believe, used to say that.
Very interesting.
Artie Johnson.
So anyway, this Indian healer and parrot sanctuary founder, Dr. Sri Ganapathy Sakananda Swamji, made a...
That was 100% different from the first time you said it. You know that, right?
And the third time's going to be even different.
All right.
Made a special pilgrimage to Brookfield when he heard about Cookie the Cockatoo.
Oh, really?
Now, that seemed weird to me.
To heal him in some way?
I don't. He's an Indian healer and parrot sanctuary founder. The Chicago Zoological Society shared a remembrance video of Cookie on YouTube. So look up. It says, Farewell, Cookie. It's really sweet.
Was Cookie a believer in Hinduism or something? Do we know?
Maybe at the end.
Maybe.
You need to believe in something.
Sure, have some open idea.
On this video, with an emotional musical backdrop, the bird is shown chirping with handlers at the zoo, eating cereal, and getting up close with the camera.
It sounds like your mornings. It's very similar to what you do on a daily basis.
There's one fan that remembers going to the zoo every year to see the epic birthday celebrations. And God love Brookfield Zoo. They had Olga the Walrus for a long time. Do you remember her?
Sure, I do remember.
And she is no longer with
us.
She had a full beard, man.
Oh, no.
And they taught her how to blow kisses.
Really?
It was really cool.
That's excellent.
And they would have Olga's fishicles or some kind of birthday cake every year.
Yeah.
And the Cookie the Cockatoo got his birthday celebration.
So people, patrons, could come to the zoo and they would also get cake and sing songs. It was like a birthday party.
It was. And, you know, I have to be honest with you, kids loved it.
Oh, I could imagine. Sure.
You know, he was 83. I shared in some of his birthday celebrations.
Would other birds attend? Or was it all humans? Because if I was a bird and it was my party, I would say, could you just bring like one or two birds just, you know, so I have somebody?
I'm almost positive there were other birds that were sitting on, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a metal ring, and like a bird stand. They were just standing there participating. They were jealous. There were a lot of bird fights after that because they wanted, you know, their celebration.
Why don't we get the attention?
Yeah. But when you're the oldest bird there.
Right.
And
why do birds do that thing with their head where they move it in and then back and then in and then back and then in and back?
Why does Mick Jagger do that?
Oh, I don't know. I guess it is the same move, isn't it? So who stole that move from who? Did birds see Mick Jagger doing it going?
It's the rooster. That's how they
is
walk.
That what it is? All right. I just wonder who originated it. Probably birds did, and Mick Jagger went, I'll do that too then. I've seen him fly away at the end of a concert. It's like the show's over, and he just flies away.
And he eats cereal.
It's a crowd pleaser.
Well, it's a sad day, and they weren't as sad as Gene Wilder, because I know you rolled your eyes. But
no,
it's just it's something that means stuff to you for, you know, from when you're a little kid.
And, right, and then it's gone.
But doesn't that blow your mind that Cookie the Cockatoo was the same age as Gene Wilder? 83, a bird living to 83.
Yeah. All right, why is it, and I ask you this because you worked at the zoo, so you would know more than me. When it comes to an animal like a dog, they say that a dog ages at 7 times the rate as a human, but I don't know if I believe that, because then they would celebrate Christmas twice a year, and they don't. But why, like with a bird, if a bird is kind of on our age line, like that bird, 83 is about the standard age for a human. That's kind of what we're shooting for.
That's a great question.
So why do some animals, and then I hear about turtles that live over 100.
I know, and we have tortoises that are, I think, are 2 years old. They're going to outlive me. I came to that realization.
They are.
Which pisses me off.
Well, I understand.
They're going to outlive me. But I will tell you, with dogs, their life expectancy is only, you know, with a big dog, 14 years, roughly. So
yeah.
That's why they, you know, at 7, they're kind of like at middle age. So that's why they figure...
It still doesn't balance out.
7 times 7 is 49. That's like middle age.
But if their life expectancy is...
Some are 20.
Yeah, it doesn't depend
on the breed.
And
that's pushing it, yeah. Smaller dogs live longer, but...
And less if they smoke, you know that. You know that, right?
How do they hold the cigarettes in their paws?
I don't know. They get a friend, I think, to help them. You've seen your dog smoke, right? It's
no.
Not pretty. It's not pretty.
He quit.
Oh, good. They'll live longer.
He quit.
That's good news.
Can I try this Indian healer and parrot sanctuary founder?
What's his name? Sri Lanka.
That's what it is. S-R-I. So
yeah.
Sri Ganapathy Sakidananda.
Careful.
Swamji.
Oh, that's his name. I know. Now I know who you mean. I'm a big fan of his. He's fantastic. All right, we need to take a quick break. Kim has the news, and then we'll find out what's coming up on the Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. Part two of our show, our Tuesday show. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. If you want to jump in, you know how to do that. You dial us up at 312-981-7200. Hi, Wendy.
Jump in. The water's warm.
It's nice in here, isn't it? It's very nice. You know what I forgot to tell you? I had a conversation with Kylie. Kylie called last night from New York City to extend her condolences to me on the death of Gene Wilder, which was very nice of her to do.
You know, honestly, I was hoping that your family would treat you with...
respect.
No, not that. That's pushing it.
Yeah.
With kid gloves, I guess.
They knew that it was a tough day for me yesterday, losing one of my idols. And Kylie did call in from New York, and she was telling me about her day. And I said to her, because I have been to New York several times, but I've never lived in New York. And I said, you have to understand that New York, the pacing is different in New York. They're like... A lot of things happen in New York in a very short span of time. And then she said to me yesterday, boy, is that true? Because here's what happened to her within one day. She went, I already told you this part. She went to one of her friends there at school's dad is in the music business. So he took his daughter and two of her friends, one of them being Kylie, to a music video where they saw P. Diddy and 2 Chainz, and if you're not in the rap world, these are two of your more popular rappers, one from a while ago, one current.
2 Chainz or 2 Chainz?
2 Chainz. and he's called that. You guess why he's called that?
Because he wears two chains. He wears two chains.
He wears two chains. Like my rapper name would be dresses like a ragamuffin.
No, you do not.
That's what my mom used to say. So, all right. So, within
mine would be too much makeup.
Too much makeup would be your rapper name.
I like it
with the number two.
Yes.
Right? To make it cooler. All right. So within one day, she went to this video shoot where she saw two rappers that are famous.
She is never going to come home.
She saw a guy get killed. A guy was walking across the street and a car turned and killed him. Just creamed him, killed him. Dead. That was very upsetting to her.
No one should see that.
No one should have to see that. That was very upsetting to her. She was on her way to her first class when she saw that. She saw a guy get mowed down in the street by a car. But then she said, she goes, I'm not used to this because we live in the suburbs and we don't have a lot of this. She said, I went back to my room, her dorm room, and there's paparazzi all over the street. She said, now I've seen one or two since I've been there. You know, because maybe there will be a model or some actor or actress somewhere she said, but they were just littered in the streets were filled with paparazzi and she didn't know what it was. And then she found out that Anthony Weiner lives on her block in New York.
I would get her home in about 30 seconds.
I know. I've taken away her texting privileges. I don't want anybody texting you. No former congressman. So she said she kind of watched that play out yesterday as these paparazzi were just camped out in front of Anthony Weiner's apartment, estate, whatever he's got, to catch a picture of him going in or coming out.
Is that on
his apartment, anyway? I don't know what he does with his spare time. Actually, I do know what he does with his spare time. It's not good.
Shame on you, Bill Leff.
I know.
Was her first day of classes yesterday?
Yeah.
So in her first day, her first 24 hours of school.
Yeah, all that happened in one quick day. Yeah. Now,
we lead a boring life here in
Chicago. I said to her, what you just described, because I went to college for 4 years, I said, that was like 4 years of college for me in Chicago. You just lived all that in a day. Getting back to Anthony Weiner, it's a conversation we were having off air in our office about his wife. It was announced yesterday that his wife is leaving Anthony Weiner. Don't you think that's a little too much too late? Shouldn't that have been happening years ago?
I don't know. Get Hillary Clinton on the phone and ask her.
Well, they're saying that this will have undertones into her campaign. And I don't see... I mean, you can't blame Hillary Clinton for Anthony Weiner being horny all the time.
Oh,
that's
no.
Not
I just
Clinton's
mean
because,
you know, she stayed with Bill, which I still don't understand. But let's not get off topic.
But in that case... All right. I think the difference is... Hillary Clinton was looking long term and saying, this could damage me I'm sure you remember things were extremely tense between them. Do you remember right after the Monica Lewinsky scandal, anytime they were in public for several weeks or months, you could feel the cold coming off of them.
Absolutely.
You could just feel it.
But that's when it would have been, in my opinion, the perfect time to say, see ya.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that one surprises me, but I didn't want to dilute the Anthony Weiner thing. I don't recall the sexting of the first scandal that came across.
The Anthony Weiner one?
Yeah.
There was more than one. There were a couple.
It was to other women?
Yeah.
So, okay,
and it was almost exactly this kind of thing, but now this time you've thrown in the fact that he's got a history of doing this. And in one of the pictures, his kid is in the picture. He was making jokes about being joined in bed by somebody. He's texting this girl, and he goes, oh, somebody just climbed into my bed. And then
trying to get her jealous.
Yeah.
And then look who it is.
And then it's his kid. That just throws a whole new level of creepiness to it. But if you're her, I know everybody's tolerance is different, but I don't know. If it was my wife and she kept texting guys in various states of undress and... I would just go, well, this is obviously not meant to be. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you just go, look, I know that I fell in love with you at some point, but this isn't good.
You want to believe, you want to fix things. You know, I could see you justifying it by going, well, at least she's just sending pictures.
I guess you could... There's ways, I guess, you could try to find some kind of way to sugarcoat it.
You said the Willy Wonka thing in your vows. You got to give it a try.
Yeah, but I don't know. There are some things that are almost inexcusable, and he was kind of teetering on all those things for so long. And I know, like somebody said yesterday, where did I see somebody was defending him going, yeah, but he went a couple of years without any kind of scandal. Well, good for him. But still, he just doesn't seem to know how to react if he's not taking pictures of himself and sending them to women.
Yeah, I don't really understand this.
I don't at all.
I mean, I know I'm very naive. I honestly really am because I don't get this at all. And has he come out to say he's a sex addict? Because it's not sex addiction to me. It's exhibitionism. There are two different things.
That's it exactly.
Look at me.
This is obviously the thing that gets him aroused and excited is to...
Not that aroused. I saw the picture.
Is to be...
Halfway.
Is to somehow be in this sort of a relationship. But if you're his wife, I mean... I can't even give her credit for sticking by him. I've heard people say, well, you got to give her credit because he had a problem and his wife stuck by him. But I don't. I don't give her credit for that. I would just, at some point you go, oh, man, I did not marry the person I thought I married. I gotta restart this.
Can we go back in his history?
Yeah.
Do we need to take a break? Because I didn't realize there were so many different...
Yeah, there were a bunch. It wasn't like a fluke. It wasn't a fluke thing. I mean, he's got one and done. No, he's got a pattern of this and a pattern that just doesn't stop. All right, let's take a break and we'll come back to it. You want to jump in? We're at 312-981-7200. Wiener Chat on WGN.
Wiener, wiener, chicken dinner.
That's what they say. Rarely, but it applies.
Anthony Weiner in the news. Now, was it yesterday that his wife, Huma Abedin...
It's not a Huma. Yeah,
that
yesterday,
is a stretch.
Yesterday, she decided, you know, it's one of those 40 strikes and you're out things that you hear about where people just go, all right, fool me once, fool me twice, fool me three, fool me four, fool me five times, but when it hits 40, I'm leaving.
All right. Well, I didn't know all this. Let's go back in time just a hair. Scandals have dogged Anthony Weiner and dragged his wife, who's an aide to Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, into the spotlight for more than 5 years.
Yes.
Here's a look back at the events leading up to Monday's announcement. This from ABC News. A little-known U.S. representative in 2010, Weiner, made national headlines with an angry floor speech in the House after a defeat of a bill that would have provided funds for 9/11 responders.
Mm-hmm.
He had recently married Abedin in a ceremony officiated by former President Bill Clinton.
Really? How about that?
Is he a minister of the Universal Life Church like I am?
I guess he is, yeah. I didn't know that.
His career appeared to be on the upswing with newfound attention because no one ever heard of him, and now all of a sudden he's starting his career,
yeah.
Political career.
Yeah.
But that attention turned negative less than a year later when the first hints of a scandal surfaced. Now, this is a year after he got married to Huma Abedin. In May of 2011, a photo of a man in underwear appeared on Weiner's Twitter account, but was later removed. After several days of swirling rumors, he claimed his account had been hacked.
Yes. Remember that? And it seemed almost believable at the time.
Honestly, it did.
Yeah.
The scrutiny only intensified as he appeared evasive and inconsistent in public. Just days after the hacking claim, he broke down in tears as he admitted to sending inappropriate online messages to several women.
Oops.
Don't do it online.
Do it in person.
But
drop them off in a manila envelope.
These aren't even sexts. This is online. I mean, do it to somebody you know if you have to do it. I'm going to start a new job where I am the... firewall for all pornographic pictures.
Oh.
You send it to me.
Yeah, and then what happens?
Get it out of your system.
Right.
And then I will just...
What do you do with
compile
them?
Compile a cloud account so I can turn it into money later on.
All right.
Seems a little self-serving.
A little bit, but I could help him for a while. I could help people. Women, too. I'm sure there are.
It's very kind of you, by the way.
Somebody should do it. Like a safeguard.
How has somebody not done it? That seems like something that somebody would have done.
When you get the urge, text to this number.
Right. Right.
And, I won't sell them until they
probably.
Die.
Probably. Right. All right.
All right. Well, still, he refused to step down and said his marriage to Abedin would continue. That's what he said. Just over a week later, amid a stream of embarrassing revelations and mounting pressure, even from his own party, Wiener convened a news conference to announce his intention to leave Congress. He said, and I quote, "I am announcing my resignation from Congress so my colleagues can get back to work.
Oh.
So my neighbors can choose a new representative, and most important, so that my wife and I can continue to heal from the damage I have caused."
Seems legit.
Great statement.
Doesn't it seem legit?
Wiener largely stayed under the radar until mounting a run for mayor of New York City in 2013. I kind of forgot about
that
this.
That didn't go too well.
After posting a surprisingly strong showing in early polling.
Is that in a different color font?
No, but it should be italicized.
Uh-huh.
He found himself again embroiled in controversy as more messages were made public. Then he said at a press conference, with Abedin appearing by his side, this is what he said: "These things that I did were wrong and hurtful to my wife. This behavior is behind me. I have apologized to my wife, Huma, and I am grateful that she has worked through these issues with me and that I have her forgiveness."
Now, is that one of the press conferences that she was at?
Yes.
She
was right next to him.
All right, because so, I know on some, she's there, and you just go, well, that's interesting.
Poor thing.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
He said the messages came from past mistakes, but it was later revealed that his online relationships with women had continued before he resigned from Congress. Despite protests, including ones from the Democratic backers, he soldiered on in his mayoral bid, finishing a distant fifth.
Oops.
In the Democratic
that was
primary.
Close.
Don't you pull out at that point?
Hmm. Yes.
I'm serious.
Fifth.
In 2014.
That's only slightly better than you did in that election.
You're right.
You got only a couple more votes. But why? At that point, why would you vote for him? I mean, you know he's a shambles at that point. You say to yourself, what's in it to vote for this guy?
Right, if he can't keep, you know, his texts organized.
Right, right.
In 2014, Wiener apologized again after marking as a favorite a tweet that called the dating app Tinder, mm-hmm. quote, "the ultimate sext machine."
Mm.
He's clever. I got to give him that.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Weiner's history here. Earlier this month, the New York Post reported that he exchanged suggestive messages with a person he thought was a female college student, but was actually a man baiting Weiner.
Oh. That's bad, right?
That is really bad.
Did he think it was Katy Perry? Because there's a lot of that going around.
It's catfishing.
Oh.
That's a different type of text.
It's only slightly different. It's almost the same.
Yeah, but boy, how embarrassing is that?
It is.
Because the picture they showed of the woman was this really buxom brunette.
In a bikini.
Through all of this, his marriage to Abedin continued. The revelations on Monday appeared to be the final straw for Abedin, who announced her intention to end their relationship and asked the public for privacy.
Yeah. Well, but...
Is it safe to say he will never be in any political position again?
It's the strangest thing. When I saw him on television at the Democratic convention, I thought to myself, wouldn't you, first of all, if you'd been through what he's been through, and it's all self-imposed, I would lay really, really, really low. I wouldn't be showing up at places like the Democratic convention. But I thought to myself, there's something behind this. Why would he show up? He's got to be planning his next move, right? There's no other reason for it. But now his next move is, it can't, there is no next move. He's out.
He should take a black Sharpie and cover the lens of his iPhone.
Right.
Just go over it.
Not have one. You know, like if you've got a problem with something that's as serious as his problem is with sexting.
He needs a phone.
I guess, but don't they have phones like really awfully low budget phones that don't have the ability to
little
send
kid
pictures?
Phone. Give him a little kid phone. He can only call
price.
Two numbers.
Right, they have that. Give him one of those.
And now Donald Trump has issued a statement. He's not giving advice to Huma Abedin, but here's the quote from Donald Trump. "Huma is making a very wise decision. I know Anthony Weiner well, and she will be far better off without him." And then he continues, "I only worry for the country in that Hillary Clinton was careless and negligent in allowing Weiner to have such close proximity to highly classified information."
Is
who knows what he learned and who he told? It's just another example of Hillary Clinton's bad judgment. It is possible that our country and its security have been greatly compromised by this. He's sending pictures of his junk. He's not sending pictures of his emails right. with classified information.
Isn't he also using Roger Ailes as a consultant as we speak? Isn't that going on behind the scenes?
Good point.
So I know he's saying you got to vet the people who are working for you, but is he doing that? I'm not sure he's doing that.
The women love me.
I guess so. All right, we'll take a quick break. News is next, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Look, Colin Kaepernick is not standing up for this song. Look at that. Look at that guy just sitting there. This is something that we have discussed on the show a couple of times, but there's a new twist in this.
You're obsessed with these type of stories.
You know, I am, and I don't know why I am.
Because you're...
I think it's because...
A little kid at heart.
Deep down, and we have said this in the past, and we will say this in the future, clowns are evil. They really are. I don't know why. They shouldn't be, but clowns are evil.
We had those clowns, and I don't mean like bad guests or whatever, but we had those clowns up from the Clown College.
Right.
And they were okay. Like even knowing they were clowns, they were okay when they weren't made up.
Right.
But then when they went in the other room and put makeup on, it got eerie. Yeah, I can't.
You know what I was thinking the other day? And there's a reason we're discussing this. We'll get to this in a second. There was a time when I was a kid that there was a sign for Carnival Straws somewhere just south of the city. Like if you were heading southwest, I want to say on 55, I'm almost positive 55, there was a giant, it was up high, like where the highway was, and it was that clown that was on the Carnival Straws box, except that when he's on the box, he's only 3 inches big, his face, but when he's on the side of a building, he's 2 stories high. And I used to beg my dad to not take that route. I'd go, I don't want to go that way because then we'll see that clown, that giant clown. Yeah, you're showing me the picture of it. That's it exactly.
He looks like Vincent Price, I've got to tell you. Or Cesar Romero, what did he play?
The Joker.
He's kind of a combination.
Yeah, he's in there.
And it's not friendly clown.
When you look at it, like what a clown is and does, you say to yourself, well, how could this go wrong? It's just a colorful character setting out to entertain kids. And I know people, whenever we talk about our fear or dislike of clowns, they go, yeah, but think about like kids in a hospital and clowns come to visit them and how nice that is. I'm not saying that a clown can't do nice things, but overall...
Clowns are for kids. I know tricks are for kids, but clowns are for kids.
But when you were a kid, like... Knowing a clown would be somewhere, did that enhance the
No, because I went to the circus.
Which
must have been the Shriner Circus.
The Medina Circus?
Yes.
Yeah, we went to that.
And there would be clowns out in front as you're walking up, and you know, your parents would like kind of push you towards them. Go
right.
Go hug the clown. No, I don't want to.
Uh-uh.
So I think that's where my fear of clowns is. We were always If there was a clown at a birthday party or if we were at Brookfield Zoo and there was some clown thing going
right.
on, parents would always kind of, I'm not a shy kid, never have been.
Right.
But when you're pushed towards a clown.
That's not good.
No, that's why you build up a fear, I think. I think that's why we're afraid of them.
All right, so why is Bozo exempt from this?
Because Bozo was a fun clown.
Bozo was fun.
And I imagine Bozo with a shot and a beer and a smoke.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
And we watched him every day, I guess, familiarity. Plus, he was on the television and not in front of me where
right.
a parent was pushing you towards him.
But even when we went to Bozo Circus and Bozo was right there,
Richie's
Cookie was
there.
Friends of ours got tickets.
Yeah,
they like when my friend Adam's parents met, they sent in for Bozo tickets so that years from then when they had children of their own, they'd have Bozo tickets. So that's how we got them.
And why did they share them with you? Would they order 20 tickets?
They did. They ordered
a
bunch of tickets, which was really smart. So each of the kids in his family, there were 3 kids, they each got to bring a friend. So I got to go.
Wow.
Yeah. And I told you, one of the times I went, I went twice to Bozo Circus. One of the times I went, I had 103 fever. And my mom called our doctor and said, what do we do? And my doctor went, Bozo tickets? You can't pass that up. What a way to go out. Go out at Bozo Circus.
Your face was as red as Bozo's nose, and you were sweating.
That was the only episode where the grand prize march and the funeral march were the same when I died at Bozo Circus. All right, so Bozo
should be so lucky.
I know.
That would have made history.
That would have made history. So, all right, so Bozo is exempt from this and all of his friends.
And
but
why?
For the most part, I think it's what you said. It's we got used to seeing him every day at lunch, and you know, you could win a Schwinn bike from him if you got a ball in a bucket. So he's our friend.
And yeah, we did get used to him, but
right.
Some of the clowns just
look
have,
at the one on that car,
yeah,
the one you showed
me. I can't
me.
Look anymore.
Think about it. What if you were somewhere and that clown from the Carnival Straws, and all they do, they just make straws. They just make sipping easier. That's what that company does. But when you throw that guy on as your logo, like if let's say you woke up, you heard a noise in your house and you went downstairs and that clown was just in your living room.
I would have a heart attack and
right?
die.
You'd be dead.
I just could not
survive
that.
I'd rather have it
that.
Be a guy dressed like a burglar with a black mask on.
Well,
I would, that would be better than a clown.
Well, yeah, because you're expecting someone to have that on. You're not expecting a clown to be in your living room.
I know. Blowing up balloons with clappy music in the background.
That squeaking.
I know.
As he's making the wiener dog.
Spraying you with seltzer as you try to call the police. That's what an awful scenario that is.
You have just given me an idea for a movie.
No, don't do it. That's too frightening. All right. So the reason behind this is from time to time over the last couple of years, we've told you stories where people, for whatever reason, dress like clowns and just roam the countryside to scare people. They just walk around. Sometimes it's out in the country. Sometimes it's a village or a town. But you'll get a guy, it's like 2 in the morning, just walking the streets dressed as a clown.
And beckoning you to come towards him?
I don't know if that, do they? I don't know,
I
maybe
don't,
they do.
I think this last one in the news is, wait, before we continue though, Steve, you have some Bozo show information.
Yeah, hey, I remember I saw Bill when he was on Bozo.
You did?
Yeah, you were in the third row, you were sitting next to Adam, remember?
My friend or my brother?
I don't know. The guy's name was Adam, and you were looking at Bozo like, get this clown away from me.
It's possible. I don't know.
You had it, and then you
know
lost
what,
it, Steve.
I don't know what they showed. I don't know. Thanks, Steve.
Have a great day.
All right. So.
Sorry, I thought it was
I don't know
pay
what
off
that, I have no idea
that.
What that meant. All right. Here's the story. This is out of Greenville, South Carolina. The manager of a South Carolina apartment complex is warning residents that if they see a clown, they should call police.
Not punch it?
No. He does not advise you to punch the clown, Wendy. What he says is if you see a clown, do something. Call the police. Which
see
is...
a clown, see a clown, see a clown.
Those, I wouldn't need the manager of my apartment complex to tell me that. I live by those rules.
Everybody does.
If you see a clown, call the police. I call the FBI. I call Homeland Security.
If you are not
everybody.
At a circus and you see a clown, feel free to call 911.
Right.
Seriously.
You should. You absolutely should. A letter from the manager to residents of Fleetwood Manor Apartments in Greenville, South Carolina, claims that there have been, and I quote here, a lot of complaints about a clown or a person dressed in clown clothing. What's the difference between those two?
Maybe no makeup.
I don't know if...
All right, read that again.
I think, all right, so this guy is warning people.
This is a great warning, by the way.
That there have been a lot of complaints about either a clown or a person dressed in clown clothing.
Oh, well, maybe it's not really an
a
official
certified
clown.
Yeah,
right.
Somebody who went
pretending
to...
pretending to be right. a clown. Case of mistaken identity.
I still think that's the thinnest of differences, is a clown and somebody dressed like a clown. I think that's almost the same. Isn't it?
I guess you could just like say if you see a clown.
Like, all right, so here's the difference. If I say there were two guys that came to my house yesterday, a baseball player and a guy dressed like a baseball player, you go, well, what's wrong with that guy? He's obviously not a baseball player. That's not Anthony Rizzo. He's a pretender. But if I say there's a clown and a guy dressed like a clown, you go, all right, so two clowns.
Two right? clowns walk into a bar.
Right. All right, let me finish the memo. The memo says there have been a lot of complaints about a clown or a person dressed in clown clothing trying to lure children into the woods.
See, I
said... That's where it gets bad.
Come here, kiddies. I want to see my balloons.
Yeah.
I have candy, a squirting flower,
no.
a little dog that's invisible.
Right. All things that clowns would have in their bag of tricks, their bag of clown tricks. Wait, let's take a quick break because there's more to this and none of it's good. All right. If you want to talk clowns with us, we're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
What about a clown who was dressed like Abraham Lincoln?
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. That would scare me,
Abo
too.
Abo the clown.
Abo, 7 feet tall.
I thought of a phrase that the FBI or Homeland Security or the CIA, that they could use for people as kind of a catchphrase to alert people that if they see a clown, they need to do something about it. Can I share that phrase with you now?
Please do.
If you see something, spray something.
That could be taken the wrong
way. I guess so. All right. I'm still working on it. All right. So if you're just joining us, here's what happened out in South Carolina, in Greenville, South Carolina. The manager of an apartment complex, that would be the Fleetwood Manor Apartments, no relation.
I love their Rumors album.
I don't think Stevie Nicks has any involvement in the story at all, Steve. I don't think. I could be wrong.
Maybe Mick Fleetwood owns it. You don't know.
He was a tall man.
He would have made a scary clown.
He would have been a very, very scary clown. So the manager of this apartment complex, the Fleetwood Manor Apartments, has sent out a memo saying to the residents of this apartment complex that there have been a lot of complaints about a clown or a person dressed in clown clothing. Ridiculous.
That is funny.
It's the same thing. Trying to lure children into the woods. That's the part that would get my attention right away if I lived there. In an August 21st report to Greenville County deputies, a woman said that her son had seen clowns, plural, in the woods around 8:30 p.m., which I believe breaks the clown curfew.
I thought that was their feeding time.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is.
Depends on if it's rutting season.
Right. That's true, isn't it? An investigating deputy then spoke with another person who said that a clown was also seen near a garbage dumpster.
That's a poor clown.
Or a clown who just decided it's time, you know, to clean up. Too many things. I got to get rid of some stuff. So I don't find fault in that. But in the woods, I do. The person said that the clown waved at her, and she waved back.
Well, that's your first mistake.
Don't wave at a clown. Right. Wait, who waved first? I'm trying to see.
The clown waved, and she waved back at him,
it says. The clown initiated the waving between the two. The person said the clown waved first, and then she waved back.
Ignore clowns.
Right. They will lure you in with their wave. You'll become almost hypnotized by their gentle wave, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you go, oh, look, I'm being waved at, and then you just approach.
If you're a kid and you've not seen a scary clown before, you would be intrigued, and you'd be very apt to follow him.
Right. That's true.
Or her.
That's true.
Are most clowns men?
Yeah, the clown ratio of men to women is out of whack. It is. I don't know why. There were also claims from some children that several clowns had been seen in the woods trying to persuade them to follow them with large amounts of money. First of all, where do they get this clown money? Second of all, how much clown money would it take for you as a child to say, all right, I'll follow you. I can't think of a denomination high enough.
$100.
Is $100?
I'm all over that clown.
Is $100?
I'm a kid. I see $100 bill.
But even
this
after
is my kind of clown. I say
a lifetime of your parents saying, if strangers ever try to lure you with candy or money,
a clown doesn't fall into that category. As a kid, you think a clown means fun and lovely things. That is not a stranger. That's a clown. To us, that's a stranger.
I think we warned our children more about clowns than strangers. I don't know if we ever warned them about strangers. We just showed them clips of the Barnum and Bailey Circus and said, stay away from that guy and that guy and those guys and that guy, too, and that guy.
The good news is a stranger comes in a white van so you don't know who's driving it.
Right.
The clowns come usually in a little tricycle or something like that, and you see them right away.
Right. Or in a Volkswagen with like 50 of them in there.
Yeah, that's true.
Witnesses told investigators that they believed that the clowns lived in a nearby home.
They believed that.
Like, that's one of those things.
All clowns live together.
Is that true?
They can save on money that way. Split the rent. That's why he's got clown money.
All right. Okay. They saved on the rent. I just think it's funny that Like nothing made these people a little bit leery until this happened. Like if there was a house in your neighborhood with a bunch of clowns living in the house, wouldn't you keep a 24-hour eye on that house?
Like, I would move, first of all.
But everybody in this town in Greenville are like, oh, they probably came from the clown house down the street where all the clowns live.
You mean the clowns up the road?
Yeah, where all the clowns in town live. That's probably where they came from. Witnesses told investigators they believe the clowns lived in a nearby home. But a deputy wrote, doesn't that strike you as being odd?
What does their house look like? Does it stand out from the rest on the block?
Polka dots.
The welcome mat is huge.
I love polka dots.
Right. But a deputy wrote in the August 21st police report that he followed a trail through the woods to the home and found no evidence related to clown sightings.
They vanished.
Disappearing clowns.
The worst kind.
I think they are. Of all the scary clowns, I think the disappearing clowns are the worst. The Greenville County Sheriff's Office say that this is the only incident report that has been filed in regard to clown sightings. Does that make you any more or less comforted? Like if there were 1,000 of them, I would still feel afraid.
I'd be more afraid. But I don't know. There's something to be said for a solo clown.
Is it eerier that there's one?
Yes. Like,
is it?
I don't know. Because one of my favorite movies Marty's going to bring up. Hey, Marty.
Yeah, definitely. You know, this comes down to one simple fact. Killer clowns from outer space.
It's a good movie.
Isn't it possible that they're, you know, I mean, my brother-in-law has a cult of friends who believe that movie to be true. So maybe
it's a documentary.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, these guys sit around, they drink beer, and they watch this movie, and then by the time it's done, they actually believe it actually happened. So I don't know.
See, after seeing that movie, and I must confess, and I don't know why, I love that movie.
It was pretty good. It really was pretty good.
I think it's the dumbest movie in the world, but it's entertaining. So what can I say?
And they very set out scary, to make. Yeah.
They set out. They wanted to make a bad movie.
But
so.
It's really. I would watch it again.
Yeah, it was fun.
I don't think they're coming for us. I hope not, Marty. But thank you.
You're safe, Marty.
And Donna has a clown story. Hi, Donna.
Hi. How you doing?
Fine. What is your? Everybody has a clown story. What is yours?
You're right.
Many years ago, when my daughter was around 3, we took her to a coliseum to see. I think it was the Zora Shriners. Circus or something like this. And she didn't last for too long, you know, because her attention span, she's only 3 years old. So we're leaving the Coliseum, my husband and I and my daughter, and a clown is following us out of there. And he's waving at my daughter, and she's looking really like, you know, she didn't like this, you know. And he would come, was coming up to her and just kind of coming on to her, you know how they do. And she just didn't want anything to do with it. So as we're walking to the car, he's walking behind us, and my husband is holding my daughter, and he keeps waving at her. You know, we're like, oh, God, let's get away from this guy. You know, my daughter was obviously very upset. So we get into the car, and we're driving out, you know, and we just got her all calmed down. And, okay, it's okay, clown's back there, blah, blah, blah. And so as we stop to make a right-hand turn, here comes this clown behind us in his car.
Oh, no.
He pulls up next. I know, and my daughter just starts all over again.
Oh, no.
I felt it was just the.
I can't believe he'd go that far. Like, at some point, if you're a clown, you go, I know a lot of kids are afraid of me, and this is one who is. I can't.
Maybe he's like me. He wants to win everybody over.
Maybe.
He wants to be liked.
I'm not real crazy about clowns. I know. And he was just like, you know, he kept, you know, da, 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 and he looks funny with the nose and the hair and all this kind of stuff. We just wanted to get away from him. And it was like the farther we got away, he was just right there. You know, so.
That is one conscientious clown.
It's Persisto the clown, Wendy. That's
yeah,
who it
know,
is.
So he went his way and we went our way, but it was just my poor daughter. I felt so sorry for her that day. We probably had to take her to McDonald's.
Is she married right now? I know she's older now. Is she married?
Oh, yeah, she's married. She's 36 now and has 4 children.
Because it would have been the coolest thing in the world at the wedding reception to just have that clown sitting in one of the aisles, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I don't know if I would do that to her. She probably still remembers this. I just wanted to share that with you.
Glad you did, Donna. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
have a
Donna.
Great day. All right, where is this that we need to avoid?
This is in Greenville, South Carolina. It's at the Fleetwood Manor Apartments in Greenville.
Rent is cheap.
Rent is very cheap right now. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
right, I don't know if you know this, but it's an election year.
This is the first I'm hearing of that.
And it's always exciting to get my little voter's registration card.
Sure.
Like, I'm going to forget where I've been voting for the past several 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I do forget my precinct, but it turns out that there may have been a breach and a lot of our information may have been compromised. On the line with us right now, ABC News correspondent Karen Travers. Karen, this is happening, right? How many accounts or how many voters' registration information has been compromised in this hack?
Yeah, they think about 200,000 voters in Illinois that hackers were able to get personal data and download data. So this was two states. Illinois, there was a successful hack, and Arizona, there was a failed hack. And this is certainly raising a lot of concern here in Washington. The FBI has now sent notices out to state election officials across the country saying, be on the lookout. Monitor any suspicious activity. Raise it up the ladder because they're increasingly concerned about this potential of a cyber attack in the lead up to the November election.
Karen, are we doing anything differently here in Illinois that made us so susceptible to this?
No indication of that, and no indication as to why it was Illinois and Arizona of all of the states. You know, one thing that the White House said today that was interesting, obviously the White House expressing that concern that we've heard from other parts of the administration, but Josh Earnest, the president's spokesman, said that, you know, Americans should still have a lot of confidence in the system, in part because it's not centralized. So elections are administered and run by state and local authorities, not one massive federal database. That makes it hard to do election reform, but he said, look on the bright side. That also means it's really hard to hack the entire country.
Yeah.
It would be smaller localities that would be affected by this. So glass half full, I suppose,
yeah,
for the White House today.
All right. And some of the information that has been accessed by these hackers, and is this an inside job or is it a foreign country, by the way?
Well, that's the big question. And right now there are concerns that this came from Russia. That's what Arizona is saying. And, you know, this follows intelligence officials in the last couple of weeks pointing the finger at Russia for that DNC email hack that
yeah.
was very big in the headlines in July. And, you know, after this came out yesterday, Harry Reid, the Senate Minority Leader, sending a letter to the FBI director saying that he's really concerned that Russian intelligence officials are targeting this election and that they're trying to do something to mess with it and you know, cause havoc. And he took it a step further. He says he wants an investigation, but he tried to implicate Donald Trump in his campaign, saying, you know,
I just said that off the air.
Yeah. Yeah. He said there's a lot of evidence between, you know, a connection between the Russian government and Donald Trump. And, you know, kind of just putting it out there of like, well, this happened. We think it's Russia. I'm just saying. So certainly making a case there, pointing the finger that Harry Reid is doing.
Well, and I said that off the air to Bill because I didn't want to bring it on
sure.
here. But you start mm-hmm. thinking about this because this is voter registration. This is a big election's coming up. I wouldn't put it past some people to try and get information, which, by the way, name, address,
mm-hmm.
Last four of your social.
Mm-hmm.
This is serious.
And, you know, what you've been registered to vote in previous years, if you switched your registration, where you're registered to vote, things like that. I mean, certainly Donald Trump has been talking in recent weeks about his concerns, and maybe he's just, you know, raising this to get headlines, but concerned that the election is rigged. And he's
right.
revving his supporters up and setting it up so that if he loses, he can point back to, remember in July, August, and September, I was saying that this whole system is fixed. So there's a lot of talk about this, and that has a lot of people in Washington worried, you know, saying, don't say that. You know, President Obama himself, a really strong response last month saying, you know, it's one thing to say that when you're winning and then on election day you lose. But right now he says the polls aren't showing that for Donald Trump.
How do we know if we've been hacked and what can we do?
That's a good question. I think that the state officials would have to let you know. Otherwise, you wouldn't know it. I mean, I personally don't even know how to get into my own voter registration system. I guess I would go online here in D.C., but it's not something that really, I think, the average person thinks about. You think about your credit cards. You think about any accounts that
yeah.
you have, auto pay for bills. There's no transactional issue involved in this, so it's not really on a list of priorities. It seems to be more of a concern to the election officials of if you can hack into the voter registration systems, what else can you do for these electronic, you know, machines that are tallying and taking votes?
But Karen, that's why we need to find out who these hackers are. I can never remember my passwords. If you know who the hackers are, I can contact them and say, how do I get onto eBay?
It's like you do that one digit off every couple months when they ask you to change it, and you're like, what season is this right now? I don't remember.
Karen, people have said it's 2016. I can't believe we can't vote online. It doesn't make sense. But when something like this happens, I think that answers that question, that if everybody is so hackable, somebody could rig the election without even blinking.
Certainly. You know, we've talked about Hillary Clinton's email server potentially being exposed. You talk about Target, their credit card systems being hacked. There are a lot of vulnerabilities, and it's something that the Obama administration has tried to make a priority, cybersecurity, a top priority for, fixing things and making things more secure. But something that is so intrinsic to the democracy of this country, there, I think, would be a lot of concern.
Sure.
If you had to vote online and somebody could get into that.
Yep.
No slam to you.
When in doubt, go with that password from the great movie Spaceballs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
No one will think of that.
I'm not slamming Yahoo News, but I typically don't go there for my breaking news. Yahoo News was the one who first reported the story. Wasn't this back in June or July, and we're just hearing about this now?
Yeah, late July is what Yahoo first reported, saying that that was when the hackers were able to download that data in Illinois, confirmed by the general counsel for the Illinois Board of Elections.
All right. Is there anything we can do if we haven't heard from our officials, our the little old ladies that sit there eating donuts when I go to vote? Are they going to call me and tell me that I've been hacked?
I would be surprised if they did. It doesn't seem like they're raising too many red flags about what the ramifications could this be. Certainly in Arizona, they're saying that there was no actual taking of any data different from you guys in Illinois, but doesn't sound like there's a concern of what that means for those 200,000 people.
Why is it, Karen, whenever something gets hacked now, the first finger we point seems to be toward Russia? Is there some reason behind that?
Yeah, China has certainly taken a back seat, because that's what it was for years. Every time there was a hack, it was Chinese hackers. You know, a lot of the data issues with some of the big companies, that was certainly the case. And now it's Russia. And I think, when we saw that DNC email hack, there was a lot of hedging, but it was certainly government officials telling us that intelligence officials were saying that it certainly had all the hallmarks of Russia, and that, they of course aren't going to say how they know that, why they know that, or, give us the details of how they figured that out, but leaving that out there and making it clear that they think they're behind all of this and they want them to change their behavior.
But, is this just a scare tactic to say, hey, listen, if we want to get valuable information, we can? Mm-hmm. Because the stuff they're taking, it's not, like, life-threatening, is it?
Right. No, it certainly doesn't seem like that. And, in some cases, is it just to be mischievous because you can, to show that you can do this, but you're not actually doing it in order to influence the election results or remove people off the voter list? But that is something that, if you look at this, you're like, well, wait a minute, they tapped into 200,000 people, their voter registration. What if they got deleted and then they showed up that day to vote and they weren't part of it anymore?
That's interesting.
That's where you start the conspiracy theories going down the line of, okay, who's behind this? Why are they doing this? What is their ultimate goal? And, go onto Twitter, go onto the internet, and you're going to find a lot of dark theories on all of that.
Boy, you just presented some issues that I didn't even think of.
I wonder
recommendation would be check and make sure that everything, you're still registered to vote in the place that you believe you're registered to vote.
I don't even know where to go. Is it gov.com? I have no idea.
I guess through the Illinois State Board of Elections.
I wonder what would happen.
We've got a smaller city, so it's easier to do.
If that scenario played out, if for some reason somebody did hack and canceled registered voters, I wonder what happens come election day, if they would have to redo the election. I don't know even what would happen.
Yeah,
it could be a mess.
Lawsuit, those people saying that their votes weren't able to be counted because they weren't on the voter rolls. And
typical for this year's election, though, quite honestly?
Yeah, when anything can happen.
Would be. Well, that's, whatever ends up happening on election day, the sense is, at least, let's hope it stays on election day and continue past it like we saw in 2000. But this is certainly, the whole election season, Hollywood scriptwriters couldn't have come up with this. That's just another chapter, maybe, in the story.
So if Vladimir Putin wins on Election Day, we'll know that it's Russian.
Wait a minute.
It's the internet. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Illinois. Traditionally, blue state goes to Russia.
Right. That never happens.
A listener has texted in a great thing. Another reason to vote early, because then if you find out you're not registered, you'll still have time.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits. You know, early voting is something that every 4 years increases, you know, not by massive amounts, but a couple percentage points of the number of people going early. It's convenient. You know, you've already made up your mind. You want to go get it done. What if your car breaks down on election day or whatever? And that's another good reason of you go and you find out that something's wrong with your registration. You have a couple weeks to fix it.
You know what makes me feel bad, I have to be honest with you, is that Arizona was able to thwart the hacking and we were not.
Right.
Illinois.
Right.
Exactly. You're, what, in Washington, D.C., Karen Travers, and everybody says Illinois, most specifically Chicago.
It's the easy joke, right, about who's on the voter registration rolls out there in Cook County, but we will not disparage.
I got to tell you, it's hell being the punchline of every joke, Karen. It really is. I'm getting sick of it.
Karen, I got family out there. My in-laws are out there. They've heard them all.
I hope the dead voters haven't been hacked. That would be terrible for our election process.
200,000. Maybe that's all of them.
All right, maybe.
They won't complain then.
Well, thank you so much for the info and cover your tracks. I don't know what that means. I don't know how to do it, but let's do it.
True.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you, Karen. It's Karen Travers from ABC News letting us know that our website could have been hacked when it comes to voting here in Illinois.
That's, I never even thought of it. What if you go in and just completely delete all, you know, the Democratic...
Right. Everybody who's registered.
Yes.
Or on the Republican side, because we don't know who's responsible. It could have been either. But, you go in and you think you're registered to vote, and they say,
wow.
No, sorry, we don't have any record of you. You can't vote. That might change things on Election Day. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll discuss many other things. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Can I share a little sweet story with you coming on the heels of 200,000 names being hacked in the voter registration?
Yes. Now is the time for something sweet.
This is a sweet little story. This is from the Boston Globe, and this is from Needham.
Yep.
Don't even know him.
Mm-hmm.
When Freya David began working at McDonald's through an innovative program to place adults with cognitive disabilities in community jobs, her mother was a little worried. What if the work was too hard? What if she didn't fit in? Well, while two of her peers did not finish the six-month training, the young woman with Down syndrome, I'm talking about Freya David, quickly warmed to the fast food work, wiping down the counters, filling ketchup dispensers, and greeting customers with a smile every day. Then she got a chance at the fry station, the French fry station.
Mm-hmm.
And Freya David, whose given name, oh, I'm sorry, it's Freya, because her given name sounds like Fryer, spoken with a strong Boston accent. So Freya David, she responded as if she was born to do it. In her 32 years at McDonald's, Freya David had served close to 1 million pounds of its famed French fries.
To one guy?
It's a girl.
To different, no, but who did she serve all the fries to?
No.
Oh, to different customers.
Yes.
Good. Because that'd be bad for your heart. I love French fries, Wendy, but you got to draw the line. Once you get up that high, you got to go.
1 million pounds?
I've had too many French fries.
You've put on a little weight. Yes, 1 million pounds.
Right.
For the next 32 years, 5 days a week, she has spent the lunch rush frying, salting, and boxing fries at the Needham McDonald's, always arriving an hour early, sometimes dancing in place before the stainless steel fry master. On Saturday, she returns with her mother to eat lunch and see friends.
Wow.
Day off visits filled with hugs and high fives. She's 52 years old. Freya David was closing in on 1 million pounds of the fries when her mother, an elegant and energetic 90, noticed that her daughter was showing signs of forgetfulness.
Oh.
And it turns out she has early onset dementia. It's common among people with Down syndrome. So she urged her daughter to retire. And she said, am I being fired? David asked her mother. Nope. But it was just time to go. So she has spent 32 years at the French fry station at the Needham neighborhood McDonald's.
That's fantastic.
And now she is retiring.
That's great news. My aunt works in Florida at the Broward County. I'm trying to think of what the exact title is of it. They study early onset Alzheimer's and dementia, and there's a definite correlation with people who have Down syndrome. What's happening is people who have Down syndrome are living a lot longer than they did a generation ago, and their incidence of having Alzheimer's is extremely high. And as tragic as that is, it also turns out to be good news because that means there is some sort of a link between the genes that you have when you have Down syndrome and Alzheimer's. So right now they're doing everything they can to figure out what exactly that link is. Why would people who have Down syndrome have a much higher incidence of going in and having Alzheimer's than most people? So that's what they're studying right now. And even though, like I said, it sound, you go, oh, that's so sad. It is sad, but it also, it brings hope for the future that they can find some sort of a link and figure out what to do about it.
Well, this was news to me. I didn't know there was any correlation early onset Alzheimer's and dementia.
Yeah.
But she had a great little career, 32 years at the French Fry Station.
That's fantastic.
And loved her job every single solitary day.
Isn't that nice? That's very, very nice.
Wouldn't you grab a handful every day, though?
Oh, more than a handful.
I got to tell you, when those fries come and they're so hot, might be the best fries in the world.
They are good. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Steve has the news, and then we've got more show for you. So stay here. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. Hey, Steve, I have to ask your opinion on something.
Yeah.
They put out this list of the top party schools in the United States.
Yeah. Huh?
And number two is the school that one of your children and formerly one of my children attend currently.
Dayton?
University of Dayton in Ohio. That was number two in the whole country.
See what you're paying for?
right.
For partying?
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
In the whole country?
In the whole entire country. Isn't that something?
Well, I think U of I has been number one for the past couple of years.
I thought it was Southern.
No, U of I more recently.
U of I lately for some reason.
Not this year, but...
It's tougher to get in there.
Well, you got to blow off some steam. I mean, there are always good schools on that list, so, you know, do I wish it was a little less party-focused? Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a mark of a bad school, if you look at some of the schools that are on there.
It's a mark of a good school. Are you kidding me?
There are. I mean... It's an impressive list of schools. So what is it? Because I visited the campus several times last year, and it didn't seem any more or less toxic an environment than any other college campus I'd ever been on. What's going on there that I didn't see?
Is it bigger, maybe? No, because U of I is huge.
No, I don't know. There's three different criteria they use for it, right?
I'm trying to see if it's possible. I don't see any.
Ryan was working on that story yesterday.
Oh, was he?
But he doesn't have the answer. I remember him saying that. So, you know, it's not a sort of a. I don't think they put it in the marketing material for the school.
No, they do. No. They definitely do not. Although I know there's plenty of kids that would be a turn on for them to go. Oh wow!
One of my best friends went to Marquette with me because the drinking age was 18 at the time.
Oh, I should have done that.
That was the decider.
It was a decider. The Brewers are poised for the playoffs, too.
Oh, back then?
So he wanted to be in
the Robin Yount era?
The Robin Yount, Paul Molitor era.
Yeah. All right. I can see that. I can understand that.
The good old days when you could go to Wisconsin and drink when you weren't 21.
Yeah, they were kind of lax on checking IDs anywhere in Wisconsin.
But you only had to be 18.
But, you know, Ohio, we've learned, is one of those states, too, that where you can take your kids into a bar.
Yeah.
And drink with them.
Yeah.
Like Wisconsin. I really thought Wisconsin was the only state that would do that.
Is that for real?
Yes.
That is for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. That.
We were at a function at Dayton last year. And they check very clearly when you go in, you know, they give you a certain color wristband if you're with your parent. And sometimes parents have to show ID to show they have the same address or last name. And then it's legal.
Boy, that might make my kids want to hang out with me more.
I bet it would. It would, wouldn't it?
I would have hung with my mom had I known.
You know, I've got this penchant for supper clubs, Wisconsin supper clubs. I do love them. And on the occasions that Terry and I have brought the girls with us, they're very nonchalant about the girls if they want to order a drink. Like, they say point blank, you know, do you guys want something to drink? And it could be anything. They're not going to, they don't call them out on it. They're fine with it.
Because they're legal with you.
Yeah, that's why,
that's
right?
That's bizarre.
Right. Yeah.
I can't even sit at a bar at, I don't want to say the name of the place. I love the place, but I couldn't believe we were meeting my in-laws there for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And the kids were at the bar. We were all sitting at the bar because you have to wait a long time for a table, and they made the kids go away from the bar.
They couldn't even sit at
the
bar.
No, and they had soda.
Yeah, you can't do it. No, that's pretty uniform.
I don't like that. They were obviously having a
Sprite or Coke or something. I wonder why that. So that's got to be part of the law of Illinois,
yeah,
right?
You can't sit at a bar.
Can't be at a bar,
even with your parents or grandparents.
When I was very young, my grandfather, my mom's dad, used to babysit for me sometimes, and he was a drinker. He liked whiskey quite a bit. So when he would babysit for me, there were bars in the area where I lived. So he would just walk me in, sit me down next to him on a stool, and have a couple of drinks of whiskey. And no, I mean, nobody even blinked. It was just, oh, that's fine. It's an old guy and a baby having whiskey. What's wrong with that?
I have to be honest with you, in a neighborhood bar, I bet you could get away with that.
Still today, do you think?
Yeah,
yeah, I remember that as a kid. The kids would go, we'd play at the jukebox,
yep,
and while the parents were at the bar.
Isn't that crazy?
It's different, you know.
But it was more, and did they serve food at the bar or no?
I don't remember there ever being food.
Tombstone pizzas.
Oh, probably. If there was, it would have been a Tombstone pizza.
And so began my love of Tombstone.
But I remember him just getting shot glasses of whiskey. And we
How
would,
many?
Two or three. We'd be there maybe an hour and a half. I was 2 years old or 3 years old, but I still remember vividly him, you know, picking me up on the floor and lifting me up on the bar.
And what did you do?
Let's not tell your mom about this, shall we? No, that's fine. Just drink. I'm fine.
What did you do? Like play that game where you put your finger on the top of a straw and get liquid out and then yeah, spill it all over the bar? You're yeah, 2 years old.
He'd tie a cherry stem with his tongue.
No, you know what I would do is I would sit with other babies and we would tell war stories. Talk about these babies today. They have no idea how easy they have it.
Yeah, I don't think
I would be mad at like when my parent, because I remembered this. And then like as I would get older, I'd call my mom and dad out on it. And I'd go, you know, you would just let your dad just take me to the bar. You were fine. Like
you were. It was a neighborhood bar at that point.
But think about, like, flash forward to today, if we were in the same incident, would you allow that to happen?
Yeah, why I wish it would have been able to happen.
Why do you assume that today is better than yesterday?
Right? Me?
No, Bill. I mean, oh, what would be the big harm if you're in a...
It's a neighborhood bar. You're not going to, you know, where there's going to be... I'm sure there was maybe a pool table in there.
There
but
was a pool table.
But it's not
dark
like...
boards.
Yeah, but I mean, it was old guys coming
right
in there, I mean, to have a drink.
What happened? What's the big, you know?
I guess
the young
guess,
kids, the whippersnappers come in and they start fighting over the pool table.
It's the only place I could ever hear Loretta Lynn was at the Legion Hall in Mantino.
Was it different growing up out in the you know, suburbs, like far suburbs? Sticks, is that what you call it?
The Sticks, the Boondocks.
Was it different though?
It was a farm town. I mean, it's closer now. People commute, but I suppose it was different.
I bet.
Yeah.
Because your kids helped work on the farm and then, you know, they
you know, we used to walk beans and stuff like that.
What does that mean?
You put a little leash on them.
Walk beans?
So a farmer.
Was beans a kid in the neighborhood?
It was the dog. Oh. Come on, beans. No, you would.
Bushels of beans, you'd walk them somewhere.
No.
Oh, God, I thought I had it.
I don't know what it is. I have no
idea. So before there were all these, you know, geneticized, you know, seeds and everything, the weed intolerant,
yeah,
or you wouldn't spray your crops, weeds would grow up between the rows of bean fields. So the way that farmers would keep the weeds out of the bean fields is they would hire the kids from town to walk, you'd walk the beans.
So you'd walk through the rows and just pick
and
the weeds.
And just pick weeds.
Oh,
I would have loved that job. Well, I still like weeding.
It was a time. I mean, it was hot, and you were out in the, you know, middle of a farm field.
Yeah, but then you could go to the bar afterwards.
But think of it. You know, they just drive through town, and kids would jump in the back of a pickup.
Oh, that, you know, seems odd.
And
that seems fun.
Yeah, well, it was different.
But wouldn't they? Why wasn't that called weed picking instead of bean walking? Because you weren't.
Bill,
literally...
don't mess with the terminology.
Right.
Okay,
you're walking the beans. You're walking down the aisles. They're not aisles. They're rows.
The crop.
Or you could tell you, Steve, they used to detassel corn by hand.
Now that I understand, I get that. But I would have gone with weed picking over bean walking. That's just me. It's more technically correct, isn't it?
He is really tall.
No. Steve is like the number one draft choice every year. They would have a fantasy draft of the kids to be
walked. I only did it a few times, but there were kids
who did
it.
What kind of money would you make doing that?
I don't remember.
You don't do it for the money.
A penny a weed.
You do it for the love of the bean.
I picked it for a penny a weed back then.
And then was there great pride when those beans were served up? Would you say proudly, I'm the one who walked these beans? I would have said that.
Well, I'd have to go to Southern Illinois to get the accent, and then I'd come back. And no, they were soybeans. You didn't.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to eat those.
Right.
Well, you do, but not quite. And
Yeah, like green bean, you can just grab one off. I like them raw, actually.
Yeah, sure.
All right, Kevin's on the line with us. We're talking about going to a bar when you're a kid.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Kevin.
Children are allowed in the bar as long as they're with their parents, okay, and they're not their parents at the bar and the kids sitting by themselves. It's a family atmosphere, and the kids are eating, and the parents are right there with them.
But what about a bar that doesn't sell food? Is that still allowed?
The best of my knowledge, children can't be in that bar after 8, and they can never sit at the bar itself.
Okay.
Yeah, which kind of stinks, because if you want to sit at the bar with your husband and you want to have dinner with your kids, you have to go to a table.
Right, right.
Right. Well, I live in Kane County, and out here, and I've been up in Wisconsin. That's very popular. Now, some of the times in Wisconsin, I've seen parents sitting at the bar and the kids, you know, but there'd be, you know, not just one kid by themselves. Say, like, you know, they brought the neighbor's kids and there was 4 or 5 kids together. But generally accepted out this way is that you're sitting with your children, and that's a family affair, you know, and most of the bars out here have to have food. So it's a kind of a normal thing. And when I first came out here, I even asked the bartender, I said, you know, is it a little late for children in the bar? And she goes, no, families is a normal thing here.
Oh, all right.
I wish my mom would have drank more, because then I could have gone to bars with her. It's just a community, though.
Is that your biggest regret?
Yeah, it is my biggest regret.
Not making any comment on that one. I really like your guys' show, and I hope you have a wonderful
afternoon.
You
too, Kevin. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
Did you ever share that with your mom? Mom, couldn't you just drink a little bit more? Come on.
My mom would have like a half a beer once a week, and then she would let me finish the rest of it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And for any occasion, it was just like her weekly beer?
Yeah.
I can't drink 12 ounces of this. The rest belongs to you.
Yeah, and it was like maybe once a week. And then we didn't have a big liquor cabinet in our house. We had the Baileys would almost become solidified because it was sitting there for probably 10 years.
My mom and dad didn't drink at all, and we had a liquor cabinet that was only for Christmas parties.
Right.
And if you went to my house today, you would still find a lot of the same liquor that was there from when I was growing up.
Same with my mom. And that's what I mean. The Baileys became solidified. It was sitting there so long.
Chalky almost. Yeah. I know. It doesn't hold up forever. All right. We're discussing this and other topics. If you want to join us, we're at 312-981-7200. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you in a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Steve Bertrand has gone bean walking, so he's done for the day.
Can I read a text to you?
Yeah.
Somebody said, I'm originally from Wheaton. I moved to West Central Illinois in the early 70s. I used to walk beans, and I laughed when I first heard it, and I also laughed when I heard the term volunteer corn.
I don't know what that is
either.
Do you know what
Steve's
that is?
It's gone, but maybe it's the detasseling of the corn.
Oh, yeah, I get. Yeah, but again, why wouldn't you just call it that instead of volunteering?
Because we're city folk, Bill. We don't know how it works out there in the rural areas.
You and I had the exact same picture in our heads when Steve was talking about his early days as a bean walker. We thought the family put all the beans in like a wheelbarrow or something, and then you walked them to market. Isn't that what you were imagining?
I thought bushels, but yes.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing. I didn't think you just walked down a field and picked weeds. That's what we called weed picking where I lived.
Or weed walking.
I guess.
Before a weed whacker, there was weed walking.
Weed walker, yeah.
All right, Katie, we were talking about going to bars in Wisconsin and I guess Ohio.
Okay, I don't know. I live in Rockford. And when I was young in Illinois, you had to be 21 to drink alcohol, but Wisconsin was 18. And I started school when I was 4, so I was like still 16 when I was in my senior year. But all my friends couldn't wait to go up to Bufus in Beloit and go get drink. And I think it's much healthier now because you're not allowed to smoke in bars. And I mean, kids used to be in bars and all that cigarette, cigar smoke that, you know, they breathed in was around.
Sure.
And I'm going to tell you something. I never did go up there. I've never been drunk in my life, but my parents in their formal dining room had shelves and there was every kind of alcohol known to man.
Wow.
I never once, I could have snuck it or drank it or whatever, you know, I never did, but I don't think it's good for kids to think, well, this is a normal way of life. You know, every Friday night or every Saturday you go to the bar and that. I mean, I just, I don't mean to sound like a prude, and I'll have a glass of wine or champagne once in a while, but I think it's a lot healthier that these kids, because these kids don't have a choice. If the parents take them in a bar and people are smoking and all this stuff, you know, the kids are there with the parents.
Sure.
So I think it's better now that they're not around all the smoke and all that, you know. But that's
agreed.
My opinion.
We try to eat dinner at home. That's what we try to
that's
do.
That's the best bet. Yep.
But thank you for sharing that, Katie. I appreciate
have
that.
Have a good day.
You
thanks.
Too.
But don't you think, like I told the story about my grandfather when I was a kid and he would babysit for me and he would just take me into a tavern.
Where people were smoking back then.
People were smoking and drinking. And
swearing, I bet?
Yeah, there was some swearing. Never at the same time. You would either smoke, drink, or swear, but never all together. But... Like, it was just, like, nobody flinched
right.
at all.
No,
I'm a three-year-old kid sitting on a bar stool with my grandfather, and he's drinking whiskey. Nobody even, but today, wouldn't somebody call DCFS or somebody and say, hey, I don't know what's going on here, but there's a three-year-old kid at the bar. Somebody would make that call, you would think.
I think there's
no?
some kind of a, you know.
Code?
Yeah, a barcode.
Yeah, maybe.
And
that's
I don't mean...
what barcode means. I've been using it improperly.
All right, we got to find out what volunteer corn is. And, Paul, you're going to explain that to us because Bertrand's gone.
Afternoon, guys. I love your show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, volunteer corn. So when you're picking the corn here later this fall, they're not getting every single kernel. Some of it's going to fall on the ground. And then next year that field's planted soybeans. So sometimes your soybean field will have corn growing in it that was from last year's field. So it voluntarily grew up this year when you didn't want it to.
That makes sense.
All right. That is amazing. And you really do rotate your crops, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I should. That's what somebody told me to do with my tomatoes. But why do you rotate crops? Because different soil?
Corn uses a lot of nitrogen out of the soil. And soybeans have these little like root balls or whatever on their roots that make nitrogen. So the corn will suck the nitrogen out of the ground, and then when you put soybeans in there, it puts nitrogen back in the ground. So you have to use less fertilizer every single year.
That is so amazing. I mean, I've heard people say that forever, and I...
Rotate
oh, yeah,
your crops,
why?
Wendy.
Just so they get a different view? I don't know,
no.
But now I understand it.
So, but
thank
yeah,
you, Paul.
Corn is just corn that volunteers itself to grow.
Love it. Thank you so much. Where are you from that you know this?
I'm out in DeKalb County.
A lot of corn there.
And you're from a long line of farming families, so.
You know your stuff. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, you know, have a good day, guys.
You too. You know if Orion is in his car listening to this, he's just shaking his head no, and there may be a tear or two in his eye.
He can come on the show anytime he wants to talk walking corn or...
Yep.
No, it's walking beans.
Yeah, you bean walk. These beans are made for walking, Wendy. You've heard the song. Nancy Sinatra knows what she's talking about.
Hi, Melinda. You're our last caller for the day, and I hope it's a good one.
Well, I was just thinking about my days when I used to go with my dad. I was a little older than Bill, but I would sit up on the bar stool. He'd lift me off, and he had friends there. I remember him giving me money. You know, that was
for what?
The jukebox?
Is that why?
Because I
keep your mouth
don't
quiet.
Tell your
don't
mother.
Hear, this is our secret. Here's $20.
So we were talking about you weren't sure if they served food in the bar that you went to with your grandfather, and what I recall being on the bar every time was a huge, probably 5-gallon jug or jar with a big top on it, with pickled boiled eggs.
Yeah.
And a jar of pickled pig feet.
Ugh.
Yeah, my grandmother used to eat the pickled pig's feet, and the liquid would turn very gelatinous.
Ugh. It was awful.
Did you ever eat them?
No, never. I couldn't even hardly look at them, but it was...
How drunk would somebody have to be?
Hey, if you're at a bar all afternoon, you need a little protein.
Oh, man.
Don't gnaw on a pig's knuckle.
Ugh.
My grandmother used to eat those. She used to... In fact, have them at her house, but I never had one ever.
I tried one. My grandma had them, too. It was, you know, it was something you kept on your shelf in case there was a bombing or something.
Maybe that's what it was. They came through the Depression, so you had to have something always.
That's right. We have beef jerky now. It's kind of the same thing.
not like that either.
I didn't think so. Thank you, Melinda. Appreciate it.
My mom's uncle used to be a butcher, and his joke was always people would call up and they'd say, do you have pig's feet? And he'd say, yes, that's why I have to have my shoes specially made. That was like, that, in the butcher world, that kills.
That did kill.
That's the number one.
It still does.
I guess it still does. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.